All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 5th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. And by the way, all this information is on our Monday call page on the top left-hand side, our weekly call page. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send it to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, it's kind of long. I may break it in half. Right now I got it. It seems that I didn't want to really break this up, but if I feel a place where I could break it in half, I will, because it's 39 verses. But we'll read it. There's a word in here I didn't know how to pronounce, so I'll do my best on that word. Okay, it's going to be Matthew chapter 23, verses 1, and maybe we'll go to 39. Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All, therefore, whatsoever they bid you, observe. That observe and do. But do not ye after their works. For they say, and do not. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders. But they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. But all their works they do for to be seen of men. They make broad their palaceteries, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, and enlarge their borders of their garments, and love the uppermost rooms at feasts, and the chief seats in the synagogues, and greetings in the marketplace, and to be called of men, Rabbi, Rabbi. But be not ye called Rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ, and all ye are brethren. And call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your Father, which is in heaven. Neither be ye called masters, for one is your master, even Christ. But he that is greatest among you shall be the servant, and whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted. But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for ye neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are entering to go in. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayer, therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he is made, ye make him twofold more the child of hell than yourself. Woe unto you, ye blind guides, which say, Whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing, but whosoever shall swear by the gold in the temple, he is a debtor. Ye fool and blind, for whether is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold? And whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing, but whosoever sweareth by the gift that is upon it, he is guilty. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gift? Whoso therefore shall swear by the altar, sweareth by it, and all things thereon. And whoso shall swear by the temple, sweareth by it, and by him that dwelleth therein. I think I'll stop there, and we'll pick up the rest of those verses next week. That was Matthew chapter 23, verses 1 through 21. So we'll pick up on 22 next week. Okay. Um, We have just a few things to talk about. We don't have a particularly a topic, but a couple of things I want to bring up and talk about. We have the campaign for constitutional sheriffs. What we need, we really need some help here to get this campaign going, because without collecting money in order to purchase these books and get them to sheriffs, we're at a standstill. So we're really counting on people to pass the word, counting on everybody, all the members of National Liberty Alliance, to become a member over there and maybe pledge $5 a month or pledge a one-time gift or something in order to support this project. Also, you know, most people belong to local groups, a Liberty group, and they should pass this information to your local groups and get these people out there and, you know, talk to them about the project and, you know, what its purpose is, and get them to read the front page and also read the handbook that we wrote for these sheriffs. So we really need to get this project moving, because it's really not moving very much at all. It's just kind of just slow going. All right. Also, we have the New York Safe Act lawsuit. We have enough people to go forward, but they're still dwindling in. I've heard that other people still are going to be sending in to get into the lawsuit. I heard tonight someone mentioned something. So we're going to wait a little while longer before we file it. I don't know how many people heard, but I don't know who put this out. I presume the governor put this out, but someone put this out in New York State with authority that they're moving the deadline till next year. Now that's what I heard, and someone else confirmed that they heard it too. So I perceive that's truth. Nevertheless, my sheriff, and I think I mentioned this a week or two ago, my sheriff said that they're not going to be able to enforce this. They have no enforcement for, you know, if you don't go and file. There is no enforcement set up for them. And he said in order for them to take your weapons, they got to go through the local judge in that county. And each county has a judge which signs off on the weapons, you know, on full carry permits and so on. And I presume he just has to confirm the fact that you don't have a problem in your past that would prevent you from having a weapon, although I can't think of many problems that would prevent you from having a weapon, just a few. But in any event, in order to take your weapons away, that local judge has to do it within your county. That's what the sheriff told me anyway. And that they will not be coming knocking on your doors to collect your guns. They will not be arresting you while you're driving or anything of that nature. And he also said that 90% of the sheriffs, and he confirmed this again. I said, did you say 80? He said, no, I said 90. So most of the sheriffs in New York State are holds his position, and he said that even the judges hold that position. So this is a political thing, and I guess they all realize it. And matter of fact, again, my sheriff told me that this is a political thing. It's all about collecting data and information that they had refused to give. So anyway, we still have more time. And so we're going to hold it off a little bit longer so we can get more people into this lawsuit. We're still going to pursue what we're going to pursue, and of course, damages. So anybody in New York that would like to get into that lawsuit, go to nationallibertyalliance.org, and right underneath the news, highlight the news, and you come down, and I think it's under the news. Let me see. Is that where it's at? Yeah, under the news, about three down, it says New York Safe Act lawsuit. And you read the information about the lawsuit and how to join in. You download an affidavit and also a paper with your basic information. And you mail it with $50 to the address that's on that page. So again, anybody that wants to still get into this lawsuit, there's still some more time, and I'm sure we'll hold it for at least another week, but we'll let you know next week if we're going to extend it beyond that. Okay.
What?
We also, let's see, we...
We'll be here.
Let's see. Okay, we really need to do more. We can be much, much more active. There are so many papers that we can file, and what we have to do really is some lawsuits. We have to sue the judiciary, and the grand jury would be the perfect group, especially the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, would be the perfect group to sue the federal judiciary. And but again, these things cost money. Not a lot of money because we're not lawyers. No one's making $1 million here or anything. But it costs money to file these lawsuits. It costs money for the paper and the serving and so on, and then the following up on that paperwork. Plus, it's work as far as making sure that we, answer or respond when they respond, and answer, their response, and just keep on top of it. But anyway. In order to do those things, we need money. But the judiciary, we need to sue the judiciary for numerous reasons. First of all, they seem to have closed down Article III courts. We need to sue them about that. We have courts that are not giving due process. We need to sue them about that. Now, we do have all of this in our court case ultimately under subversion, and it's really, sort of a depository. Is what we opened the case up for in Albany, and we're filing all of our papers that we've served on different people, in different levels of government, and we also are, doing some indictments, and we're filing them up there. We're also recording and reporting this to Jeff Sessions and also to President Trump, so they get a copy of everything we're doing. We're expecting them to send U.S. attorneys down for the as prosecutors to prosecute these cases, as far as indictment is concerned. And they are still keeping our papers; they're not sending it back, and we'll be sending some new papers soon. We did the indictment, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, but something. Well, I think it was about a week and a half ago. And we indicted the numerous individuals under the Bundy case, the Hammond case, the Wildlife Preserve, and the assassination of Lavoie Finicken. And so that paperwork is taking a little time to put together because we want to give some historical background inside this paperwork. And we have a lot of things to put together. There's going to be a lot of paperwork involved with this, so we're still kind of working on that, putting that together. And also looking at different ideas of others who have filed, the indictments, what their process, their structure, what kind of a structure. I've noticed that the structure is different from state to state. We want to stay within some kind of a criteria and make sure we give them all the information that at least all these others give, as far as the indictments are concerned. Let's see. I guess from there, do we have any announcements? Jan or anybody needs to bring
No,
anything up?
oh, I didn't get any requests for announcements. I didn't get any requests to speak, and I don't have any questions tonight. It's a wide open session.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I don't have much more than that. Is Gerard here yet?
I was looking for Robert. I don't know about Gerard.
Okay. Let me see if I can. Gerard, are you here? I guess he's not. All right. All right. Well, anyway, we'll move on. So we'll move early over to Brent. Brent, are you here? Is Brent here?
I haven't seen
I
him
don't
either.
see him either, yeah.
John, Carl, John.
All
Nope,
right,
I
well,
don't see
Brent, if
him.
you are here and we don't see you and you're having troubles, once you open your mic up, just let us know. We'll move over to you. But we'll keep an eye for him showing up maybe late, too. I don't see him at all. Okay. All right, I guess we'll go right into Q&A. There's nothing else, so we'll go into Q&A. Yeah, that's what we'll do.
Yep, that sounds good. We got plenty in
Okay,
Q&A.
let's take our first caller. It looks like, let's see, California Fred. Go right ahead, California Fred.
No, I think you have me. It's Eric.
Oh, Eric. Go right ahead, Eric.
Okay, try to be quick here. I just wanted, I had a question about local emoluments, something that I wanted to address, perhaps, if it comes up. But about sessions, there's some things I noticed recently. I didn't expect to get on this soon, so I don't have my links, but I could send them to you if you wanted them. But he wanted to make the civil asset forfeiture on the federal level easier to do and allow states to skirt around their stricter civil asset forfeiture laws. That they call it, I forgot what they call it, equal sharing or something. I forgot what they call it, but essentially it allowed states to skirt their more strict civil asset forfeiture restrictions and pass it off to the federal government, which of course is something that we don't want them to do. Then also, you know, this Chaffetz fella from Nevada or Utah, wherever it was out west, who resigned, I remember we were basically fans of that guy because he seemed to be a bulldog. But he was on a show recently, and he said he took some stuff over to Sessions. And Sessions, I mean stuff about the Russian dossier, and this included big people like Mueller and Comey and Clinton. And Sessions said he wasn't going to do anything with it. This is what Chaffetz said. Like, he's not going to do a thing with it. And so the idea that we're going to send anything to Sessions and expect and believe that he's going to do anything for us, I think is I think we're barking up the wrong tree.
Well, I do know that there are a lot of people out there that would agree with you. I recently was listening to a commentator, you know, reporting on a lot of things that are going on, and they've been pretty accurate over the past, and, you know, they're a trustworthy access of news. And but they held a position against Sessions. And also, I think Alex Jones, one of the guys there, held a negative opinion of Sessions. He's not doing this, he's not doing that. He should have done this already, he should have done that already. And I agree with all that. But I also, you know, some of the ideas or thoughts, if he's been busy on indictments, I mean, if there are 10,000 indictments out there that's taken course over the year, over the past year, then he's been pretty darn busy. And I think there's a plan going on, and I think really they're really working with the idea, let's give them as much rope as they want. We're not going to do nothing about it. Let's keep on going. They're only going to hang themselves more and more. Indeed, they are. Okay, and when they don't, when they get information and they don't report it, then it gets pushed and it gets pushed out there. Take this memo, for instance, you know, that's been covered up for, you know, all over the place, and it continues to be covered up, and finally it gets released, and I hear there are five more memos potentially that are coming out, and it's going through a process right now. So we really don't know what the plan is, and the plan for session is to kind of, maybe, I don't know what the plan for Sessions is, but it could be to sit back, hang back, and keep doing the work undercover, and just ignore everything else. So he looks really bad, I agree. But we still have to send him the stuff because, nevertheless, he is, you know, the Attorney General, the United States Attorney General, so he has to get a copy of this stuff. And then that's just another nail in his coffin if he indeed is crooked or evil and continues. I don't understand why Trump would allow him to continue, because Trump doesn't tolerate non-action, people not doing their job. And he said a few things here or there, but he hasn't gotten rid of them. The other thing, I don't know anybody following, you know, QAnon or the Anonymous Q. You know, he's mentioned on a couple of occasions, trust Jeff Sessions. Now, you know, what does that mean? Okay, so there's mixed things going on there, but most of the people are really getting frustrated. The unfortunate thing, and this is the problem with everything we're doing, people get used to instant, gratification. They expect everything to be instant, to get the information immediately, to get something done immediately, to achieve a goal immediately, to make things work immediately. And when we run into this wall often enough, people will join us, and then, you know, well, we're not moving fast enough. We're not doing, you can only go so fast. We only have so many people doing so many things to begin with. But you can only move so fast, and things take time. And right now, in our case, for instance, you know, we're waiting for critical mass. We're not going to go anywhere until critical mass comes. Now, critical mass could come next week, it could come next month. You know, we have no idea when that's going to happen, but we need critical mass. We're going to file this indictment, and we got some big names in this indictment. We didn't intend on doing it, but you know what? We had to put them in, because why would we leave three or four big names out and go after everyone else underneath, when it's clear that these names should be in there too? So we did go for the indictment for the big names, and they're going to go out there. Now, we have a filing in court. You know, it's up in Albany, New York. We have a file number. We're going to be filing it up there. It'll be on our indictment. We're going to put it out on the Internet. We're going to put it out on our websites. But you know what? It's up to the people. It's up to everyone listening here, everyone participating, every single person. It's up to you to get this indictment out and into the masses. You know, put it up on YouTube, share it on a news program, send a copy somewhere. You know, just get it out there, because if we can get that to go viral, okay, that potentially could be the critical mass spark. So, you know, but it's up to the people to make it work. Only the people could save America. But again, people are used to tweeting. You know, we used to have other people with us over the years, and goodness, we've been in this for quite some time, over 10 years now, and people have come, and people have gone, and some people have come back, but people have come and people have gone, because they're impatient, they're not seeing the things happening right away, and it's just not the way it is. They don't understand. I get letters from people. And I don't have time to read these emails. People still send me emails, and, you know, most of them just go into delete. I just can't read them all. But, you know, I try to read what I can, and I get an email here or there, and someone has something going here or something going there, but they really, and they expect us to do something or us to help them, which, of course, we will do whatever we can. But we're not here for that purpose. We're here to save America, not to help individuals win their court cases. And believe me, you know, ultimately, the end game of this whole thing is to help individuals win their court cases by bringing justice back into the courts. Because until we bring justice back into the courts, we're not going to get anywhere. And that's our end goal in everything we do. You know, we had an individual on last week, I think it was, or the week before, I'm pretty sure it was last week, and they were kind of upset a little bit that, you know, we couldn't help them with their case and what they wanted to do. But, you know, look at what they didn't want to understand. Well, look at, clearly they didn't read our front page. Clearly they didn't watch our videos, because if they did, they'd understand what we're doing, and then they'd understand how maybe they can fit what they're doing in with us. But we only were working on two types of cases. One is the habeas corpus. Habeas corpus requires a lot of work, and we require a lot of people involved with that to get it out. You know, we've been trying to get that back out so we can file habeas corpuses. We have a couple we're going to go forward with, but I'm not sure whether we're going to be able to work the habeas corpus as much anymore, as much as we want to, because we just don't have enough people working this. And then there's a certain amount of experience that needs to be had by the people working these papers, and to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed. And it takes time to train people, and so on. But anyway, we've been doing the habeas corpuses, and then we did, and we also did the non-judicial foreclosures. Now, both of them are due process, okay? Habeas corpus is due process, and people are not getting it, so that's why we're filing habeas corpuses. The Bill of Rights is clear to lay out the requirement that due process be given, and we don't need a statute, but we do. It's called the habeas corpus, and it's very powerful. It lays out very clearly even the timetable for the judge and others to respond. 3 days is it. And unless they have good reason, the judge can give as much as 20 days. And that's not just a carte blanche to give 20 days. No, someone needs more time, and they say, well, what do you need? Well, 20 days. No, well, you do it in 7, you know. Look, if someone's in jail, we need to get them out. We need to show some kind of a case against them and a reason to hold them, okay? So it's a due process problem. And this is, you know, when you go up against the due process, when you go up against the habeas corpus and you ignore habeas corpus and you give it no power, no authority, no merit from the perspective of these judges, okay, well, that's evil. And that's a knife in the heart of America is what it is, okay? Same thing with non-judicial foreclosures. It's just like no judicial process at all. No due process at all, not even a consideration of it. Nobody gets to be heard. The whole thing is just a sham. And so, again, these are two big violations, and people losing their homes, it's a big thing, you know. Families are misplaced or displaced, shall I say, and lives are destroyed. And so we did those two things for two reasons, okay? Number one, it makes the point in our case against the judiciary. It goes right to the heart of the problem, due process, right to the heart. And so that's why we chose those two different kinds of cases. Now, again, habeas corpus, we may or may not get back into unless we can really get this thing tied down. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I have to put time into it, and I don't have a lot of time, so my time's got to be minimum. If I got to go through a lot of these papers and check everything out, it's just going to take too much of my time. I can't do it. So we need people with experience. We do have one individual with experience, and what's the name of that, Jan? Do you remember? Anyway. Someone with experience. So the thing is, of course the individual was a little upset because we didn't want to work on his case and do what he's doing or wants to do. I get people who call me, they want to do, how do you set up a grand jury? Well, we're not going to help anyone to set up a grand jury anywhere. People don't know what they're doing. They don't understand enough of what liberty really is. They don't understand the Constitution. Now, and they may claim to know it, but when I listen to people talk about the man on the land stuff, sewed in with what they think the Constitution says, and they don't really understand you know, the power and the authority of unalienable rights, and it's only going to get, you know, mess things up. It's going to get themselves in trouble, too. And that's why we only did one grand jury, which is a national grand jury, which we can make sure things are done right. Not that we're perfect, because we'll make mistakes too, but we're very careful in how we do it and what we're doing and how we file it. And people need to learn how to do these things. And again, that's why we got over 1,000 people who have signed up to be administrators. And they're taking courses. So a lot of them haven't finished yet, but they're taking two courses, and we're writing a handbook. We've got we've got everything pretty much, laid out for the handbook. We're just bringing a lot of information together, and this is a handbook for administrators in order to work the necessary processes within the county. Whoever becomes an administrator, 4 people in each county, in order to call for the grand jury or the trial jury, and to give them an orientation and to watch the courts like a hawk to make sure they don't violate this process, that the judge doesn't try to tell or push the jury on statutes, and a prosecutor doesn't try to abuse and take advantage of the grand jury. These are the things that the administrators need to be doing, and it's a job. You know, right now the courts are supposed to be handling this, the prosecutor's office or the judge, depending on which one. Usually the judge will handle the trial jury, and the prosecutors will handle the grand juries. But they stack them, they abuse the people. If they get any whiff of the idea that anybody in that jury even is thinking about nullification, they're out of there, or they're threatened, Okay? And this is a major problem, of course. That's why only the people can take that job on. So we the people need to take that job on. And that's the main purpose, by the way, of National Liberty Alliance at this point in time, is to focus in on the juries, to take control of the judiciary. And right behind that, we want to take back control of the political process. We have a well-laid-out plan for that. That's where we started out. We know exactly what needs to be done to take the political process and empower back to the local individual and for them to take control on who's going to run for office and what, in this office or that office, whatever it may be. And so that's kind of what our purpose is. And so sometimes people, they connect with us and they don't read our front page carefully. We tell everybody when they get on to read the front page and watch the videos, understand what it is that we are doing, and then work with us. Eventually, everyone's personal cases will be dealt with, but it'll only be dealt with when we have justice back in the courts. And now people will say, well, I need justice now. I'm going to lose my home now. Well, there's nothing we could do. I mean, yeah, you can fight your battle and maybe some people can come out and help. And by being in the court writing affidavits, maybe we can put enough pressure on the judge to force him to do the right thing and so on and so forth. Occasionally that does happen. But, you know, that's all we can do is help people to support people. But, you know, because you lose your home, you go through hard times, your family, you and your family is displaced and it's a very rough road and traumatic and so on and so forth. But, you know, eventually you'll stabilize and you resettle somewhere and get things going. But the hope is not gone. The loss of your home is not finished, because when justice is returned into our courts, every single one of those people who went through a non-judicial foreclosure has every right to come back into a just course and demand that they get restored. Restoration, not only physically, but, you know, money for mental injuries and so on, you know, pain and suffering. And so that's the end result for everyone. But again, people sometimes they get lost, and they get disappointed or depressed, and then they just go back to sleep. There is no other. I could tell you, and this is a challenge. If there's an answer out there, anything other than what we're doing, to make these courts, to bring these courts back to the people, under the control of the people, I'd like to know about it, because there's nothing out there. I can tell you. That's why National Liberty Alliance was created, for that purpose, to fill that need, to fill that void, to bring justice into the courts. Now, I know there are people trying to do it from different perspectives, but I can guarantee you it's not going to work. I can guarantee you it's not going to work. Not that their work is bad, and I think they should continue and do what they're doing, but unless the people take control, we are the only organization that are trying to bring the people into the system to take control, to step up and do what they need to do, okay, and take back their country, take back their judiciary, and bring it back under the law of the land. Unless people are willing to do it, it's not going to get done. And nobody is out there is doing that. We are the only ones, okay? So, you know, those people who have kind of got depressed and left, well, there's no solution for you then. You know, I mean, going back to sleep is not the answer. And clearly, if you go to sleep, then I guess liberty doesn't mean that much to you, and the freedom of your children doesn't mean that much either. I don't know. But again, we've been trained to be complacent. We've been trained to go back to sleep very quickly, to get disappointed quickly, because we didn't get it right away. It's like the little child who wants it now. Well, get some patience, and maybe next year. I want it now. You know, well, some people never grow up, I guess, because they want it now. All of these instant access things, tweeting and all this stuff, that really makes the whole process worse, because people, again, want that immediate gratification, that immediate response, the immediate thing done. And what we're doing, that's not going to happen that way. And patience is a virtue, and good things come to those who are patient and wait on it and keep pushing towards that mark. You know, the hope is there, and the patience is there, and we will achieve our goal as long as we don't give up. It will be achieved.
Can I ask my question now?
Yeah, hang on. I guess I'm about at the end. Who is that? Is that
California Fred?
Sounds like Eric. Huh?
California Fred.
Yeah, but Eric was in there. What happened to Eric?
I got the cue to talk when Eric did, so I think we were both online at the same time.
Oh, Eric, are you there? I don't see Eric.
Anyway.
Well, I know he had something else, but go ahead. I took a long time to go through that answer because it was important, and we do get new people coming in here. And we need to repeat it because I think, you know, so we got new people in here. They really don't know what we're doing. And they have to understand what we're doing because this is the most important work as the people can do. There's nothing more important than the people take control of their future and their destiny. And you do that by taking control of our courts and our political process. And that's what NLA is about. Go ahead, Fred.
Okay, two things. The thing I wanted to ask was, I believe the Constitution says you shall not add a tax upon a tax. That means tax something twice, right? So I look at automobiles, tires, batteries, and other things that have a federal excise tax, like alcohol and tobacco. And you turn around in these liberal states and everything has a sales tax. So they are actually taxing a tax.
Well, I don't know that the Constitution says that. They may, and I missed it, but I'm not sure where that might be.
Yeah, you're not supposed to have a tax upon a tax, and we have.
You might be right. I can't say that for sure. I see Brent is here, which I'm going to move over to him in a minute. But
throw that question in Brent's lap.
Well, yeah. When Brent comes on, I'll ask him to respond to that.
One other thing I wanted to mention is in the messages, there's a person that says, "Please unmute me. Thanks."
I don't know. That's Eric. That's Eric. I just unmuted him.
Okay.
I'm going to mute out now.
All right.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who fingered you there, but you got kicked out.
Yeah, it's okay. I just wanted to ask you about emoluments. Oh, yeah, and the cryptocurrency. I brought that up before. I know it got brought up at the beginning of the call, but I'm totally with you about legal tender and silver and gold and I think this crypto stuff, they say you can't manipulate it, but I think the powers that be can manipulate it. And I also, I know this sounds kind of doomsday-ish, but I also believe it is tending towards the mark of the beast. I think it's real bad news. But anyway, my question was about emoluments, and I'm trying to figure out how I might address it on a local level when the sheriff gets money from federal agencies, when police organizations get money from federal agencies, say for civil asset forfeiture, and also when municipalities get money from this Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, resilient cities, green cities type of thing. The Constitution talks about no emoluments, but I'm assuming that's a common law custom. But how would you address it at a local level is my question. Thank you.
Well, I see Brent is here, and I think he's more qualified to answer that one than I am. Brent, are you on? Can you unmute yourself? Brent looks like he's no, he's not unmuted. Let me see if
sure.
I can't. Well, no, he's muted on the phone, so I can't unmute him. I guess you can't unmute someone that's on the phone. We can only
right.
maybe unmute them on a headset. I'm not even sure about that either.
Yeah, I can.
Brent, star six. No, he's got the control, so he should be able to unmute himself. I think
right.
it's star six. Star six, Brent, unmute yourself. All right, anyway, while he's waiting to do that, I know there was something else I wanted to say. I forget what it was.
Well, you might think of it.
Star. There he goes. You got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you Go might. Ahead. I'm technically challenged. I think people will figure that out by this time. I'm still trying to get into the 20th century, much less the 21st. So, but I'm here. You were talking about emoluments at the local level.
Yeah, maybe you can
yeah.
respond to that.
Well, I just tell you what I
found. Oh, and that was the other thing maybe you could respond to also that was brought up about a tax on top of a tax. You know, look, we know that taxes are legal, you know, or lawful. You know, that's how the government collects the money. So there are certain lawful taxes. So if a local government puts a sales tax on it, I guess the question becomes, can the federal government put a tax on it too? And how does that, you know, where does that stand? I have no knowledge in that area, so I don't know if you do either. But anyway, go ahead. Start with a moment.
Well, you were talking about a moment and how they would apply it, how the principles of it would apply to local government. And that wouldn't have any direct bearing on the Constitution of the United States because those are two separate and from a human standpoint, sovereign jurisdictions. And you're talking about counties and towns and cities and villages and chartered rural water districts chartered by the governments of states. They have their own constitution here in California, and maybe the Constitution of California says something about that, but it seems to me that it wouldn't make much difference what the Constitution of California said. Those fellows out there don't seem to care much about law at all, from what I can read and what I've experienced of California. It's an odd place, and it's getting odder. It's always been a little bit odd, but it looks to me like it's way out there now. And people are leaving the state so rapidly. I saw in the papers, this is about 6-8 years ago, the Sacramento Bee ran an article saying that they're losing so many people that in 1 year they lost 20 school districts in the state of California. They just shut them down. They had to consolidate with other districts. So unlike when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, people were dying to get to California, and they were keeping the roads wore out getting out there. Now it's the other way around, and they're wearing out the roads leaving California. But as far as I would expect anything to happen out there, by the way, I've even seen them in panel grand juries out there do investigations of county jails. It doesn't make any difference. After they give them their recommendations, they don't do anything about it. That's what I noticed. It's all window dressing with those folks. There's got to be some what they call a substantive due process involved, and they're not following through. Well, you're talking about emoluments. The Constitution of the United States does address such things. And if you remember, D.J. Trump was accused under that clause of some roundabout thing. One of his businesses got some kind of money from somebody somehow. I didn't understand exactly what it was, but it didn't go anywhere. And as far as I know, I've never read a case about emoluments. I don't know that that's ever been applied in a meaningful way. Maybe there is a case out there about them, but it just means that what it boils down to is the fundamental idea that bribery is against the law. Bribery. That means you can't. When the bribery only applies to government employees, it doesn't apply to the private sector. You can bribe people all day long, and it's lawful in most cases. It depends upon if there's a statute against it with some bank or some corporate entity, I suppose, or somebody that's doing business on the public stock exchange. But in general, if you want to pay somebody off in the private sector, that's your business and that's his business. But to pay off a state representative or a bureaucrat, and I know it happens a lot. Well, that's what emoluments are all about. But what we're talking about there is,
I guess special interest groups have a special license to be able to pay off. But
well, no, I see. No, and that brings up a lot of stuff that's going on right now. Emoluments have to do also with foreign powers and taking influence over our government. And that's happening like it has never happened before in the history of our country. Governments such as the Chinese government, that was what was going on in the Bundy situation out there. They want that land. All the ranchers in Nevada have been shut down, a big cattle state. Now nobody can ranch because the Chinese have interest there, and they have the money to pay. And, of course, the Arabs and the Islamic community supported Hillary Clinton from overseas and paid her lots of money. And the Clinton Foundation is filled with illegal money. That's not a secret. It's not a matter of opinion anymore. It's blatantly obvious. It's in the record. But yet, the federal government and the powers that be aren't doing anything about it. these all, this is what amendments are about, but in our Constitution, again, just in the simple, most fundamental sense, has to do with federal government. Our Constitution, as a fundamental matter, doesn't bind state governments, although we have now, where we're through the doctrine of incorporation of the Bill of Rights, we see that the Bill of Rights is being used to limit the states. I have serious reservations about that. Not all the Bill of Rights, by the way, is that's done. excuse me, that is that being done. But there are some of the first 10 amendments to our U.S. Constitution that has happened with. It's a dangerous precedent, by the way. It turns our Constitution upside down to do that. But people think that it's working to our advantage so far. Well, maybe it is in some cases. For example, City of Chicago case, McDonald versus Chicago, followed in the wake of the Second Amendment case that was in D.C., and the name of that one slips me right now. But immediately, McDonald versus Chicago came under the incorporation doctrine of our U.S. Constitution, whereby the Supreme Court of the United States incorporates the Bill of Rights or some provision of it and applies it to the states. The governments of the states, and they say, well, the governments of the states can't encroach upon your Second Amendment rights. Well, as a matter of constitutional law, fundamentally, the Second Amendment never applied to the state governments. It only applied to the federal government. States could do what they want. They could outlaw firearms or have no limit on firearms, etc. But it is of great curiosity to me how the federal law and the federal constitution have come to govern, and more so all the time, govern everything, and therein lies our problem. Very much of a problem, by the way. Even the First Amendment, freedom of religion, is applied now to state governments with a vengeance by the federal courts. Well, not until, well, for decades, that, well, didn't happen until very recently, as a matter of fact. The First Amendment, right, the freedom of religion, or, the government shall not hinder nor help religion, is some, it's put some ways, the Establishment Clause and then the Free Exercise Clause. That particular provision of our Constitution wasn't put in there to apply to the states at all. And the application of it to the states is dangerous. It has a dangerous side. Of course, the states, when the country started, they wanted to do what they want. 9 of the 13 colonies had state-supported religions, and they didn't want the federal government interfering with that. Same way with, of course, we can apply that same principle to abortion. Should the federal government have anything to say about abortion? And I think Ron Paul hit the nail with his head on that when he said, no, the states can do whatever they want. They can make it legal. They can make it illegal. The federal government has no jurisdiction over matters of health, education, and welfare. That's true. They don't, not under the Constitution. And all of the Department of Education, the federal money, and all that baloney is blatantly unconstitutional. And that's what's destroying us, is the federal government applying federal law to state governments and federal power and federal money. And you say, well, Brent, you're being an extremist. No, I'm not here to say whether I'm an extremist or I'm not. I'm just here to say it's my job to understand the law as best as I can and tell the people what it says. The law is the law. And it is the thing that brings order to us, and it brings freedom. If there's order, there's freedom. If there's no order, there's not freedom. And if you're an American, you have a duty to the law as well. And if you don't like it, then there are mechanisms put in place at the federal level where you can change it. And we've done that on a number of occasions. So it's not the thing to do to ignore it, and it's not the thing to do to play goofy games of gymnastics with words and law, as our federal courts now do, and apply the Bill of Rights, for example, to the states or whatever else they want to apply, federal law. It's the thing to do to learn the law. Number one, and our Constitution is law. It is a brief of the common law. It's a good one. Learn the law. Number two, keep the law. What does that mean? That means you don't add to it and you don't take away from it. You keep it. That means safeguard it. You let encroachments come in on it, it will destroy it. If you add something to the law, like the bureaucrats do now by the tens of hundreds of thousands of pages, the law then is sapped of its energy. It doesn't have any Well, you just don't pay attention to it anymore. No, you just pay attention to the regulation. That's what you're scared of, and that's what the courts pay attention to. That's what's the matter with tax law, the regulations. You are adding to the law. You're not safeguarding it. Add to it is to take away from it. You're obscuring it. To take away from it will invite, and it will happen, you'll add to it if you take away from it because you leave a hole in it. Leave it alone. So learn it, safeguard it. Number three, do it. Those are our three duties as Americans. Those are our three duties as a Christian folk. We're to learn, keep, and do. And that is the admonition of the book of Deuteronomy, not to mention the rest of the Bible. And it's always the same, the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. If you don't know them, you can't do them. And if you don't know them, you can't tell others about them. And if there is no law, the only remedy to the lawlessness we have is true law. But as far as emoluments go, it's just a matter of bribery. Bribery is against the law. Blackmail comes with that. It's another species of that kind of an idea. And that's just what I know about it, some of it anyway. John, back to you.
Okay,
thank you.
Just to clarify some things, I'm sure you agree that states cannot violate an unalienable right. They shouldn't have that power, authority.
No,
null and void.
And, sure, I do. Yeah.
So when you go into a state court and you're dealing with a problem and you're not getting due process or whatever the case may be, you bring it to the court's attention and you get that repaired. Maybe you give the judge a paper of error, okay, writ of error, and at that point, we go as far as bold as to overturn the judge's decision on that writ of error. But in any event, if that judge ignores that writ of error and continues to pursue, at that point he's acting outside of his authority. And I'm thinking you would agree with this, is that the only avenue at this point is to go to the jurisdiction that has the jurisdiction over this, which ultimately is the law of the land, brings us into the federal courts. Unfortunately, the federal courts are as corrupt as our state courts, maybe even more so. But, you can't put more pressure on the federal court than you can on the state court. At least that's been my experience. But anyway, you would agree with that, right?
No, certainly. Can you hear me, John?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, I'm just making
the
point.
Saying, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't leave the wrong impression. I'm glad you said that. I'm all for all the rights of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. I'm all for the states following those. But still, if we put power in the federal government too much and don't let the states take care of it themselves on those points, then we put ourselves we're allowing the centralization of power. And no, we need to fight just as hard at the state level to make sure that those things are upheld. And if they aren't, you can remove it to federal court. That's why we have two jurisdictions. And it's important. That's important too, two sovereignties. And the state courts are competent to hear any constitutional question. The federal courts are only competent to hear the federal constitutional question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's really a simple thing. Of course, people have to be educated in order to exercise this simple thing, and they have to be willing to step up and do something and participate on this. But look at, I think it's a simple thing to keep the federal government under control just by, as Jefferson said, chain them down by the chains of the Constitution. And so if we do that and don't let them go beyond that point, one of the key points is that in order to become big government, a big federal government, in order to take over the world or take over the states, so to speak, and they're at that point and they got plenty of money to do it, is money. And if we take that money away from them, then they don't have they can't even start to pursue it if they don't have the money, okay? And that's the big thing. They collect all this illegal money that has, that they don't have the authority. They tax things and do things. Look at the IRS alone, what they do. And then the IRS funds all of these things because that's what they're looking to destroy America, ultimately, from what I can see. And I think that's clear. Again, it's all about money. So if we can get the people into take control of the courts, this has always been the strategy of National Liberty Alliance. If the people can take control of the courts by taking control of the grand jury and the trial jury, where it truly is within the hands and the power and the authority of the people, okay, unadulterated, with the ability of nullification, and you get that. If the people can take control of that, okay, they can stop all illegal things going on in any government agency, whether it's on the federal, state, city, it doesn't matter. They can stop it all. You know, again, the administration we want to set up, which we can also have the grand jury investigate it and give the ultimatum to a county or a government, or even to the federal government. Look, at what you're doing things you don't have the authority to do, stop. Okay? Stop right now. Because if you don't stop, we're going to reconsider other things, such as an indictment. Okay? And that's how we control the government. And then we wouldn't have to worry about all this, because if the government doesn't have the money to be the big, the monster that it is, the octopus, if it doesn't have the money, then they can't do it. And if we watch them like a hawk and keep them within the guidelines of what that Constitution says, Congress cannot make laws outside of the criteria that we've laid out in Article 1. You know, and the courts can't step out or create any other kind of law or anything that we've laid out in Article 3. Now, it is true that we have state constitutions, and the state constitutions, they take care of their own process, and it's almost duplicate from the federal, but they do things differently, and they write things up differently. And as long as those laws, and the key in the state, in my opinion, the key to control any state constitution or any state law is to read all law in light of our unalienable rights. And we've got a good list to begin with, which is the 10 Amendments, and the Bill of Rights. So, right there is a good starting point, and anything that violates that and other unalienable rights is null and void, and the state can't pursue and go forward. And of course, we always have that federal government to move into to bring our case against the state should we not be able to get justice in the state courts, which normally, often we don't, because they maintain the status quo. They're all political. And, the judges are political. And so we have to, really put their hide on the line. That's what I see in the court. And put them into a place where they don't feel comfortable of being. But anyway, that's kind of my thinking. All right, you want to add anything to that, Brent, or we'll move on? Matter of fact, I think we're going to move on to you. Do you want to bring something up and get back into the declaration?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to move over to Brent. Let me make that announcement. We're going to move over to Brent Winters. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. And he's going to bring something up for the next 20 minutes or so, and then we'll move back into Q&A. Go ahead, Brent.
Thanks. And it bears repeating again that my opinions may or may not be the view of National Liberty Alliance, but they often, most often, I think, are the only remedy for lawlessness, a true law. We're going through the Declaration of 76, or we have been for quite a while now. I get rabbit trail here once in a while, and I kind of got away from it the last couple of weeks, but I tried to say a few things about it. We're up to, as we move through this indispensable document, this document, the Declaration of 76, is indispensable to our United States Constitution. And that's the reason why they've been published together all these centuries from the very beginning, because our Constitution of the United States is no more than a boring and dispirited, dry skeleton of words if it doesn't have a real case and controversy behind it. And that's the way our common law is always. And our declaration even says that you can't get into a federal court. Well, all of our state courts are the same way. It's a common law rule. You can't get in, to quote our Constitution, without a real case and controversy. And that's an old common law phrase, centuries old, and it means you've got to claim that you were bloodied or you can't get into federal court. You were damaged. You were hurt. Something terrible happened. And you have to plead it that way. And if you don't, they'll throw it out and say, we're not here to give opinions about hypotheticals. This is a common law court. I just heard, I go to YouTube, you can watch what goes on in courts now. It's rather fascinating. And there was Rod watching a judge get reprimanded I'm just sick to watch stuff like that. Anyway, the Supreme Court of the state was reprimanding the judge, and she confessed her crime or her violation of the ethics code, but I could see it was much worse than that. But also I saw that courts are out of hand, and they're acting on their own cognizance. They're doing what they want. They're not even waiting for real cases and controversies anymore. Our common law is not about bookish men sitting in smelly, dusty libraries with candles and monk's hats on. It's not about scholarship. It's about reality. And that's what distinguishes us from the rest of the world. This is not an exercise in intellectualism. Our law works or it doesn't. And it'll never work unless there's a real case in controversy. And that means people have to have a real fight going on, because we believe if there's not a real fight, that the questions before the court won't be sharpened. If you don't have a stake in the outcome, you're not allowed to participate. You've got to stand to lose or gain life, liberty, or property, or a combination thereof. And if you aren't in that position, the court shouldn't let you in. And courts increasingly, I noticed, do that. Very dangerous. Well, we're at paragraph 19. Some people say, Brent, can you tone it down? You come on like horseradish. I was just thinking about that today. I was eating fresh horseradish. I love fresh horseradish. And there's few places you can get it anymore. You used to be able to get it a lot in those places out in Nevada and Reno. I like to eat in those. I never gambled a day in my life, but I used to like to go in and eat the smorgasbord in those casinos, those big ones, and they always had fresh horseradish. And it reminds me, when I eat it, of what people say about me. Well, let me get to paragraph 19. It says they're mad at King George for imposing taxes on us without our consent. And we went over that last time, now that I remember. Then we get to paragraph 20, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. That's paragraph 20 of our Declaration of 76. Depriving us, it doesn't say in every case, but it says in many cases, the benefits of trial by jury. Now back in those days, the days when our country separated from Britain, as we turn our eyes back in times of crisis, which men instinctively do and ought to do, well, we turn back. Rhode Island, there was a colony called Rhode Island. I remember learning when I was in grade school that Rhode Island was the smallest in area, I believe, in land area, of all of the states. Rhode Island loathed the law of the city as opposed to our law of the land. They loathed it so much that she conducted her vice admiralty court using the jury. Britain said, you're under admiralty law. They said, oh, okay. See, what they were trying to do was get rid of the jury, because admiralty law, like martial law, like the law of the city, like all of the world, it's a martial kind of a law, a bureaucratic kind of a law. There's no jury. And so Rhode Island's, in their admiralty court, they didn't panel the jury. They wouldn't put up with it. And consequently, conviction of merchants in their courts was very rare, in their admiralty courts in Rhode Island in those days. Massachusetts, one of the, of course, it was an original colony. For those of you folks who have gone to school in the last 20 years, Massachusetts was one of the 13 original colonies. Its hatred for the law of the city was so strong that Massachusetts never allowed an equity court from its first settling by Puritans back in the 1600s until the year 1873. Over 200 years would not allow an equity court. Equity courts are without the jury also. And they did it for good reason, because experience shows that without true and impartial common law jury, governments will control the outcome of cases. Let me repeat that, just so you think about what's being said. Experience shows that without a true and impartial common law jury, government will control the outcome of cases. Now keep in mind, one of the great distinctions between our law of the land, as it stands in contrast to the law of the city, the civil law, is that our law of the land is process-oriented. The law of the city is result-oriented. In all of the world, South America, France, Germany, Vietnam, Russia, China, all of the world, the only thing that matters when you go to what they call trial, well, what we call trial, it's not a trial in those countries, it's an inquisition. An inquisition, mild in most cases, but not always. Like you remember the Spanish Inquisitions and all that, that's the kind of thing they have. That was nothing unusual back then. Because the law of Rome and the law of the Roman Church, which was running those inquisitions, that's the way they still do it. What does that mean? That means that the powers that be have given you a statute that tells you the result you have to reach, and it's the judge's job. He's not a judge at all. He doesn't judge anything. He's a civil servant. He's not a lawyer. He's trained to be a judge and fill a civil servant position as judge, and his job is to make sure that the result, the powers that be command, is reached. That's what happens in an inquisition. In a trial, by distinction, it's not result-oriented. If it's done right, common law countries have trials. That's where we fight. And that means you don't concentrate on the result, achieving a certain result. You concentrate on adhering to a certain course of process. We call that due process. And that's why in our Constitution of the United States and our federal courts and all things that go with it, it's due process is the number one right. In the Fifth Amendment, it's guaranteed, and in the 14th Amendment that was added later, it's also guaranteed. No man's life, liberty, or property shall be taken without due process of law. Our Constitution is a brief of common law government. As one Supreme Court justice said, it's a common law government in compact draft. It doesn't explain anything. It just says due process. Well, why doesn't it explain it? Well, it doesn't explain what a dollar is either. It mentions a dollar. It doesn't explain that. It doesn't explain trial by jury. It just says trial by jury. It doesn't explain that. It doesn't say anything about house and panel, who can be on the jury. It doesn't define what peers are. That's true with all of our, every phrase in our Constitution is that way. It doesn't say what a militia is. It doesn't say what a free state is, and the reason it doesn't say those things is because in those days when our Constitution was passed, all of those phrases and words were part of the consciousness of Americans. There were about 3 million people lived in the American colonies at that time. There were about 8 million people lived in the country called England, the mother country, as they used to say. 8 million versus 3 million. We were no small place compared to England. We were substantial. We carried clout. And not only that, we were British. We spoke English. We were related. Our Constitution even says that, consanguinity. There was a close tie there. And so people in the colonies demanded what their cousins had on the other side of the pond. And they told them that the common law didn't apply. But we had in our consciousness even a greater consciousness than the English, or if you want to add the whole thing together, which at that time it was, that the British, the Welshmen, the Englishmen, the Scotsmen, and even those in Ireland, Northern Ireland, and the Cornishmen, all of them had a like kindred mind and spirit. But as it has been said by men much more learned than myself, historians, and it's true, and it's still true today, the Americans have always been and remain yet today more English than the English. Our common law is more important to us than it is to them. We've carried it to a different degree than they have. That's what our revolution was all about, carrying it to a different degree. They had carried it to a great degree in their English revolution of the 1640s. They established the authority of Parliament, of the legislative body. They called it republicanism. And it had never reached that point before, and they destroyed the ultimate authority of the crown. In England today, Parliament is absolutely sovereign. No one on the face of the planet calls the hand of Parliament. Well, we got it to America. We had our war, and some of the states tried that, Pennsylvania notably. They put all power. They thought, well, now we can do like England does. We learned our lesson, and they put all power in their state legislature. They found out real fast that was like multiplying the power of the king, combining it all into one single will, and the tyranny that came out of that. They should have been paying attention to the Parliament did the same thing in England. Then they turned on everybody and started hanging people and cutting off their heads. Well, that's what they did in Pennsylvania. And they said, well, whoa, we got to back up and think this over a bit. Now, our Constitution of the United States had laid it out at the federal level in the right way. The powers of government are co-equal. The Supreme Court doesn't trump the other two branches of government. No, that's absolutely false. There's nothing in our Constitution that says that. Last week, somebody asked, I think, the name of the fellow that wrote the book that influenced our Supreme Court so much to think that they were on the top of the mountain, the king of the mountain. And as one Supreme Court justice said, let me think if I can get this straight. I haven't quoted it. I like to quote other people because he who never quotes is never quoted. And this is a great quote to give you the attitude of the Supreme Court. I think it was Harlan. Justice Harlan wasn't a bad guy otherwise, but he said the Supreme Court is not infallible because they're right. They're infallible because they're the Supreme Court. No, I didn't get that right. I'm going to have to go back and buff myself up on that. But the point he was making was, when the quote all came out, was we're supreme. But keep in mind, the Supreme Court is not the supreme government. It's the Supreme Court. That means it's the court above all the other federal courts. It's the court of last resort. Supreme Court doesn't mean it's supreme over the land. It doesn't mean it's supreme over the president. It doesn't mean it's supreme over the Congress of the United States or any state legislature. Remember, in a common law country like ours, and you can still read it, they're called opinions. They're not called law. And the trial courts, what they say is called their findings. And this is what we found. They don't make law. They look for it. They look for the application. Why? Because truth is eternal. That's why. We talk that way. They write up their opinions that way. They call them opinions. Let's think about what opinion means, and let's not lose the meaning of that word, and let's bring it back and say, yeah, those fellows are just giving their opinion. And that's really what they're doing. They're giving their opinion. And their supremacy is not of government or over all of us, the people. Their supremacy is over the other federal courts that appeal up to them. Very important not to forget that. It's not spoken about. Whenever I hear the word supreme, I hear it in the context of applying that word Supreme Court as though they're supreme over everything and everybody. Blatantly unconstitutional. Co-equal powers is our common law government. Well, I was going to say the Americans are more English than the English, and they are in this way, because we are more common law entrenched than they. William Blackstone's commentaries, when we separated from Britain, 3 million people here, 8 million people over there, Blackstone's commentaries have sold by far and away more volumes here among 3 million people than they did in England of 8 million people, and it was popular there. It was by far and away over and over and over more popular here in the American colonies than it was there. And the funny thing about it was, and still is, I suppose, the first volume of Blackstone's commentary says the common law does not apply in our American plantations, our American colonies. But the Americans, they didn't see it that way, not even a little. And they bought those volumes, and they were familiar with the word jury, the word dollar. They were familiar with all of the terms and phrases of our Constitution. To quote the Supreme Court again, says Chief Justice, I believe it was Taft, said that our Constitution binds up in its words and phrases our common law of government. And you can't understand our Constitution unless you understand something about our common law. That doesn't mean, and Blackstone did us a great service, and he said a great thing in the first volume, and I pass it along to you. He said, I didn't write these volumes so that lawyers would have something to read and learn or come, although that's what happened. I wrote these volumes so that the Englishman, no matter who he is, can know something of our law. Because if he doesn't know something of our law, we're going to lose our law. And he says it's the duty of the Englishman to know something of the law. And it's the duty of the American also, by the way, to learn something of our law. And if you want to learn something of our law, if you can learn the fundamentals, I'll let you in on a little secret. If you really learn the fundamentals, the first principles of our common law, you'll know more of the law than most lawyers in America. I'm not exaggerating when I say that, because to be a lawyer in America has come down to, at this point, being bureaucratic-minded, learning regulations, and that we don't practice law in America by first principles. Justice Jackson of the Supreme Court, the last Supreme Court justice appointed that wasn't a law school graduate kind of a fellow. I think he attended some lectures, but he sat for the bar when you could back in Massachusetts without all that. And he made the point that Americans individually need to know something of the first principle of the law. And he said the problem, and this is back in the 1940s and 50s and the 30s when he was around, the problem is that lawyers aren't practicing law by first principle. When they go into court, for example, they don't say, wait a minute, this violates Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States. No, they don't do that. They go in and start talking about regulations and arguing about regulations. They've got their faces stuck in, their eyes are stuck and their faces are stuck to a leaf off a tree in a forest, and they're not seeing the forest at all. They're just seeing the veins of the leaves of the trees or of the leaf of the tree that's stuck in their face. Now, that's not true with every lawyer, and I know some otherwise. But in general, that's the problem, and that's always been the problem. The inability, the failure to get the big picture. If you can do that, like David in the Bible, he says, I know, writing in the Psalms, he says, I know more than all of my teachers, comma, because I meditate. I ruminate is a better translation on thy law. I chew it. Rumination is a Latin word. It means to chew like cud. And I get the big picture. And David said, I know more than all the people that teach law. Well, you can do that too. Now, that doesn't mean that you want to say you know more. David said that. I don't like to hear people say that. I think that's a little presumptuous. Don't get that attitude. Just quietly learn, and learn the first principles of the law. The Constitution of the United States is a good place to start. You read those first principles in the Bill of Rights. In other words, the government is barred. You are secure in your person, your house, and your papers, and your effects against unlawful searches and seizures. Apparently, the government and the federal prosecutors and the state prosecutors don't care about that. They have no respect. Doesn't seem like anymore for that. Why? The reason why is because I really believe this. Our great weapon is what we learn and what we write and what we say and the attitude we have. It's not an attitude of belligerence that will make the difference for us. It is an attitude of confidence, of quiet confidence, to move from quiet desperation to quiet confidence, knowing that there is a lawgiver and his law, he will vindicate his law. The consequences of encroaching upon his law are inevitable, and those that encroach are going to pay the penalty. They will, whether by the hand of another, by the direct hand of God, or God will allow. And I don't know how he does it, but I know true law is impossible to avoid the consequences of. But to have that confidence, you can't have that confidence unless you know something of it. And I know, of course, I'm talking to the choir. People here on this call are here because that's what they want to know. And there are resources available where you can do that. I try to find time in this day of technology to listen to somebody on YouTube every day that is talking about something that I need to know about some particular part of the law. And I don't have trouble finding what I need to know. And you need to do that too. And I would suggest, just in passing, as much fun as it is to hear how evil everybody is and listen to people rant and rave about how lawless things are, you can get a little of that to make you realize it, but spend more time with learning the truth itself, not learning what the evil people are doing. And by the way, end with this. Somebody told me this years ago, and I found it to be true. 15 minutes a day, every day, on any subject for 15 years, at the end of 15 years, you will be the expert on that subject. You will know more than you understand you know. You'll be good at it, but you got to be consistent. You got to be, by brushing your teeth before you go to bed. You don't always want to do it, but you take that few minutes and you get it done. Take 15 minutes. Just sit down, take 15 minutes and read. I know you don't understand it always. I know I don't understand it all either, but read the Constitution of the United States. Get those phrases in your head. And once those phrases are in your head, they are fundamental. You'll remember, those are first principles. And then you want to know what a dollar is, you can go find out later. You want to know what just weights and measures are? Well, you can read up on that later, but you need to get it into your head first. You need to get the lay of the land. When I first went to San Francisco, California, when I was a very young fella, and I was there on business for Uncle Sam, and I had a friend take me out to that island in the middle of San Francisco Bay. He took me out there. I'd never been to the big city, and it was kind of scary, frankly. And San Francisco was a scary place, and weird things going on. Anyway, he took me out to that island, and we drove out across the Bay Bridge. The Bay Bridge goes across the bay, and that island's right in the center. And not in the center, but in the bay. And then the Bay Bridge goes, and then it goes through a tunnel, then it goes on over to San Francisco from Oakland, and right there is, off to the side of that island, is where they first, back in the 30s and 40s, they were going to put the San Francisco Airport, and they filled all that in and made a big platform out there. Now, later that became U.S. Navy's naval base called Treasure Island. But he got me out on that island, and we climbed up on a high place. We got off on the side road, climbed up on a high place, and with one sweep of my eyes, I could see San Francisco on my left, I could see Berkeley on my right, on the other side of the bay, and then I could look behind me on my right, and I could see Oakland, and then on around, I could see Alameda, and I could just turn my head 360 degrees, and I got it all. And it all kind of went up from the bay, and you could see the towns, you could see downtown Berkeley, all that stuff around. I navigated that bay area after that for the next few years. A year later, I was there every year and then came back here. I never did get lost. Didn't have a map, of course, didn't have GPS and all that baloney. But because I had a lay of the land, I could get around. And no matter where I ended up in the Bay Area, I just looked down toward the bay and all the landmarks were around there. You can do the same thing with the Constitution of the United States. If you just discipline yourself to read a little bit of it every day, pretty soon you'll begin to see the sweep and the flow of it. Somebody will say Article 1. You'll say, oh, yeah, that's... has to do with the Congress of the United States, and then Article 2, oh, yeah, that has to do with the President. Then Article 3, oh, that has to do with the Supreme Court of the United States. And you've got that kind of that lay of the land in your head. And by the way, you can do the same thing with the Declaration of 76, which is what breathes life into our Constitution of the United States. And I'll make one plug for myself here, for myself, for what I've said and my written down. I don't know, I haven't been able to find anyone who has put down an orderly outline of the Declaration of 76. And so I decided I would do that. I said that surely this thing is organized. And the more I got into it, the more I realized it was organized to the IT. And so in my booklet on the Declaration of 76 and Constitution of the United States, Common Lawyer Comments, clause by clause and blow by blow, I put table of contents in the front, and the table of contents is not only a table of contents, it's I put it there in a way, I formed it in a way that it's an outline of the Declaration of 76. And you can, in one glance of one page, you see the flow of the thing and how Jefferson primarily and others organized it. And then you begin to understand it's written in organization like a legal brief. It's a complaint. And you'll understand it better once you see how it's organized and how the parallel passages go along with each other, then that provides meaning to it. But the more you look at things, the more detail you see. You want to start with just learning the landmarks, so you have the sweep and the flow. The details will take care of themselves as you continue to hear about it, continue to listen on National Liberty Alliance, as you hear other people talk or read, you say, oh, I see, that applies, yeah, that the Constitution says something about that. The Declaration of 76 says something about that. And by the way, much of what is in the Declaration of 76 complained of, the Constitution puts it in law. Well, I think I've talked long enough. Thanks again. I appreciate these opportunities to say a few words. John or Gerard, if you're there, I'm back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. And, you know, if anybody has a question for you as we go along, feel free to respond or to any of the questions that are asked if you want to pipe in. So we'll move back over now to Q&A. We'll take our next caller. And
John?
Yes.
I have a question. It kind of comes up from time to time, and it's general and pertains to Article 5 Constitutional Conventions. And if you have a moment, I think it'd be worthwhile for you to say a few words on. It says, I would like to know what NLA's response to an Article 5 Constitutional Convention of the states and the rewriting of the Constitution, should we ever procure one and ratify new amendments. If this possibility ever becomes reality, should we be loyal to the new Constitution, since it would appear legitimate, or continue with fidelity to our original document? If this issue could be briefly addressed in tonight's conference call, it would be greatly appreciated. Okay.
Yeah, I can respond a little bit. Maybe Brent can expound on it more than I can, but generally speaking, a constitutional convention makes me very, very nervous, especially in today's environment. The controls of our government, we just can't possibly allow it. Until the people can take control of their destiny, control of their judiciary, control of their political process, the most dangerous thing in the world for us is a constitutional convention. It'd be awfully difficult for them to get it. They did that purposely to get a constitutional convention going. I know Robert Schultz made argument here in New York concerning a potential constitutional convention potentially coming up in the next, I think in 2020, I think here in New York, they're trying to fight for that, but I'm not sure where that's at these days. But in any event, he went to court to make it clear and to make his case that no elected official can, when the convention comes together, an elected official cannot sit in that convention. It has to be the people. And, you know, of course, there's the question, well, what about people who had served as a political animal before and so on? That's kind of, it gets a little dangerous, though, because it's just, you know, there's politics comes to play here. But the bottom line, and this is the key, you know, I'm very comfortable with this, with the misinterpretation sometimes of the Constitution. Some of it's just so obvious. I mean, I don't even know how they get this across past people. They're just not paying attention to some of these things. But look, we must read the Constitution, any Constitution, in light of the Bill of Rights, or shall I say, in light of our unalienable rights. That's the key. Anything that violates an unalienable right is null and void, period, end of subject. And that gets finalized by the people in a court of law. So no matter what they do, the question is the people going to have control? Right now, we have no control of anything. You know, we do not control our political destiny. Other people control that for us. Our committee men are puppets. They have no say on who runs for office and who doesn't. And if they try to buck the system and walk their own papers for the people they like, they're going to find themselves kicked out of the process. We have no control over our court system. Every jury out there is puppetized. It's a stacked jury controlled by the government. Ultimately, when a person is accused of something, we saw this out in the Bundy trial and the Wildlife Preserve trial, the Hammond trial, okay, where the judge takes control, okay, and convinces the jury that they have to apply the statutes. Now, thankfully, we still have some people who are able to see beyond that by the grace of God, even in its worst cases, and do the right thing. Okay, and that's how come they didn't get a conviction in the Wildlife Preserve. That's how come they didn't get a conviction over in the Bundy case, although they did have some for those people who, you know, made a plea, and they ended up with a jail sentence. And some of these people, and then there's a couple other people still going to go to trial. I mean, this is really crazy. But if we the people controlled the process, none of that would happen. If we the people controlled the political, the judicial process, if we controlled the grand juries, if we controlled the trial juries, if we orientated them in a proper way of how they need to view law, if that's what we the people did, and we taught our children that, you wouldn't have the problems that Trump is dealing with. We wouldn't have a swamp to be drained. We wouldn't have an FBI going astray. I mean, it is so seriously bad and seriously defunct. I turned on CNN today just to see what they're saying over there, and NBC and ABC or a few others. I forget which one, maybe MNBC, whatever they are. Anyway, CNN was one of them, and I just couldn't believe what my ears were hearing, what these people were saying. It's so far outside of reality, and it's just total making things up of lies. Now, this is the control that the elite still has on our you know, news stations. Ultimately, that which we call news is no news at all, but that's what it is, propaganda. But people believe it's news, okay? And people have a hard time pulling away from that. You know, we can see that in the medical field when, you know, people go and they get all these stupid pharmaceuticals and they get sicker and sicker. Yeah, the ailments may be disappearing on this or that what they went for, but something else pops over there and they die anyway, you know. Very rarely does someone get beyond the process and survive in, you know, the medical field. They're good, you know, when they sew people together in a car accident or someone broken up somehow. But when it comes to, you know, trying to deal with someone that's ill from some illness, they just do more destruction. And they never look to the nature side. But no matter what, people know that, and they still go to doctors. I know three people who died of cancer, and I pleaded with them, just to try. It's not going to hurt you. Try this, try that. And they ended up sticking a course with their doctors, and they're dead. They're in the grave today, okay? And because, I don't know why, it's like they're afraid to take control of their own life, mommy and daddy government. A lot of people claim they don't want the government to run their life. They don't want mommy and daddy. But when it comes down to the, boils down to the bottom of the whole pot here, and you know, you're going to step up and take responsibility, they grab back onto the mother's skirt. They go back to mommy and daddy. They go back to the government, you know. And so, you know, the thing is we have to take control ourselves. We have to step up and take this control. And if we the people don't do it, we're going to lose what we've got. And so a constitutional convention in today's environment would be really a very dangerous thing. I don't think they'd be able to pull it off anyway. I think there's enough resistance for that at this moment in time. There's no real need for it. But again, if they did have a constitutional convention, as long as we don't lose that understanding, and we've almost lost it already, we need to get it back, we need to reestablish it, is that all law is understood in light of our unalienable rights. If it violates a right, it's a problem. And that's a principle or a rule that will keep our government straight. If the people can just understand that one rule of law. Anyway, Brent, do you want to respond to any of that? You might be able to answer more of the technical side of things than I can.
Well, I was listening to you talk, and can you hear me, John? I don't know if it turned
right
off.
Ahead. Yep,
oh, okay.
You're coming through.
I was listening to you talk, and I forgot what the question was. I was just engrossed in what you were saying. What was the question?
Oh, it was Article 5 concerning the Constitutional Convention.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with, boy, that scares me. And when I see people promoting that idea, and I've watched them over the last 10 years, there have been debates and high visibility lawyers talking about it. One of them, for example, I always thought he was a pretty good guy. He was promoting the Constitutional Convention. His name was Mike Ferris. He was the founder and president of the Homeschool Legal Defense Organization that did so much over the last 30 years to make homeschooling acceptable. And he went to court, him and his fellow lawyers a lot, and did a lot of hard fighting. And then he founded Patrick Henry College, and him and a few others in Virginia. And so I'm not against the guy, but I was surprised that he was promoting the idea of a Con-Con convention. And it seems to me pretty obvious that we have a constitution, and we have a constitution that sets forth principles of common law government, and we're not following them. Is another piece of paper or another sentence or another line or a couple of sentences, is it going to help us? What? How could you improve, this is my thinking, how could you improve upon co-equal powers, the right to keep and bear arms, stated clearly? I can't imagine those kind of things, for example, being restated and be restated better. We have seen that they have served us well. The only reason that people can say they aren't serving us well is that the courts ignore them. Just that simple. Rewriting it isn't going to help, that I can see. As a matter of fact, it has to be a nefarious idea. And some of those nefarious ideas get into people's heads, and they really think they're doing the country a service when they're nothing but sucked away by a spirit of madness. Or maybe by their own self-importance. I'm not accusing Mike Ferris of that. I just don't understand why he sees we should have such a convention. Now, if a fellow wants to promote the idea of adding an amendment for some reason that isn't redundant or is really needed, but that doesn't happen very often either. You know, for example, people talk about women got the vote because there was an amendment to the Constitution. That's hogwash. Women had the vote, especially in the southern and western states, the states that the liberals complain about being backward. The southern and western states had given women the right to vote. And the reason they had given women the right to vote in those states was because those were agricultural states, and in those states, property and land was a big deal, and when your husband died or your father died, you didn't have a husband or whatever, the women had land rights, and they were holding land. And so they said, well, we've got to give them some way to, if they have a stake in what's happening, we've got to give them a way to express that. And then they came along, and the left, and said, oh, we're going to have a constitutional convention. We're going to give women the right to vote, and they made a big promotion out of it. And people that are educated in Ivy League schools are still saying the Constitution of the United States, the amendment, and all the work that those suffrage women did got women the right to vote. Baloney. That's absolute baloney. And slavery the same way. Going to have an amendment. Going to make it slavery against the law. And so that was baloney too, and it shouldn't have happened. It turned the Constitution upside down because it was clear that the states had capitulated at that point, and slavery was being done away with rapidly. And if we had been patient and relaxed, are we really better off? Has the black man and the black woman done better in the big cities? Answer, no. They fill our prisons. The white man is still on top of them. They're still abusing them. Why? Because we wanted that quick fix instead of letting the states slowly come around, do things sure-footedly, and make sure that everybody's taken care of. All that was a way to, drove the black man off of the land, drug him into the cities where he could be exploited by the industrialist and then put on welfare and exploited politically. And not only that, now the white man's in that position and doing this. They're doing the same thing to him. It's getting worse with every year. So it comes back to, we don't need a constitutional convention. We need to do what our Constitution says to the hilt. That's what we need to do. Go ahead.
Amen,
John.
Amen to that. Look at anybody that's for a constitutional convention. Show me someone who's for a constitutional convention, and I'll show you someone with a hidden agenda. I have never heard any good reason for a constitutional convention. You know, why do they want it? You know, it doesn't even make any sense. Look, there was no need to write a law to free the slaves. There was no need to write a law or anything to give women the right to vote or any of those things, because the Constitution doesn't deny it. And clearly, the foundation of this country, all men are created equal. There it is, period. We don't need to think or talk about it. Black, white, red—it doesn't matter. You can't enslave another. It's immoral. It's wrong. So we didn't really need the law to fix those things. Really, they did that in order to put more, snares into our Bill of Rights ultimately, which I don't think they really achieved. I see some of the games that they played with words, and I see how they tried to make certain things, and I understand the game they play with the word citizen and all that other stuff, but it only really satisfies those people and gives their minions the more of an ability to feel comfortable to break the law and stick with the status quo and think that they can rest in the lie that they have really sowed in there, which really you can't interpret it the way they want you to interpret anyway. Just because they think they could change the meaning of a word, it changed the whole thing. Well, it's not that simple, you know. But in any event. Okay, what else, Jan? Anything else?
Anything?
John, I'll make a comment if I can,
Yeah, go right ahead.
You just keep bringing up things like link sausage that I think are important. But back when the United States was in this terrible embrace of civil war, as it is called, the northern states and the southern states slaughtering each other like animals. One of the big questions that came up to that was, and I know many evil things were said about Abe Lincoln, probably a lot of them are true. Well, I know some of them are true. He ignored the Bill of Rights in a lot of ways, but he said this, for whatever reason. He said this at the Cooper Union speech, I believe it was, in New York City when he first went there. This is before he was president. He made the point that the Declaration of 76 is law. And all the New England liberals of that day that wanted the war so bad and wanted to free the slaves immediately denied that the Declaration of 76 is law. And that question among legal folk, lawyers and the professors, it still isn't settled. And most of them, in the opinion of the courts, I think, even is now mostly, the Declaration of 76 is not good law. And that's what the document we should remember that says all men are created equal and they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness, by the way, is the pursuit of what happens. It's taking your chances. It's going ahead anyway and seeing if you can pull it off. The pursuit of happiness, and that's law. Our Congress has recognized the Declaration of 76 as law, but yet the courts are saying, and it's the popular opinion now, oh, that's not good law. That's just our Declaration of 76. Well, back before the war between the northern and the southern states, That was the question then, too, and Abraham Lincoln asserted that it was good law, but he didn't have many people that agreed with him. And if we would but admit that and say, yes, men are created equal, it doesn't say men are equal. It says they're created equal. That means they're created equal before the law. He's very careful in his choice of words, created equal before the law. Well, that says a lot about all of us, no matter who we are or what color our skin is, or who our ancestors are. If that's not good law, isn't it fascinating, though, that those New England liberals, they didn't want that. They didn't want the Declaration of 76, because the Declaration of 76 said all men are created equal. But yet they wanted war. How do you put that together? And the only way you can put that together is that the double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. He doesn't know whether he's going or coming. He's just a pagan. He'll say one thing one day, another thing another that's different. He'll talk out of both sides of his mouth. It is inevitable. To argue with somebody like that, you're beating your head against the wall. You're arguing with an animal. You're not arguing with somebody who's going to talk sense. And that's what's going on in politics today. There is no sensible argument because there are people in politics, of course, that are nuttier than fruitcakes. They like to molest little boys and girls and be paid for it, and not to mention what else they're doing. So the Declaration of 76 is key to this, and that's why we want to talk about it. Well, thanks, John. Back to you.
Okay, thank you, Brent. All right, anything else?
Nope, I don't have anything more.
Okay, we'll go to the next caller then. I don't know the name of the state, 717. Let's see, let me unmute them. Next, okay. Actually, 304-861 just came up. Who is that from West Virginia?
Hi, this is Deani. Hello, everyone.
Good, how you doing?
Okay, I had a question. If anyone can speak to this, because I have suffered a non-judicial foreclosure and forcible eviction. I've looked up the SDAT for the state of Maryland, and it lists the property as being sold by me to U.S. Bank, and U.S. Bank selling it to two individuals that are really part of Carrington Realty. And this is like the fourth different type of...
You know what? Where is this paper filed at? Where is this located at?
On the Internet. I just went on the Internet and I looked it up.
Yeah, but once it's on the Internet, you know, where is it saying it's filed at?
It's the tax, the Maryland Tax Office.
Why don't you send an affidavit in denying that? See what they do with that? You see, because look, they play the game, and it's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to really pull a con job. You've given the property up to them, and they sold it. And of course, they're going to get their money back, which is really no money for them to get back. Nothing belongs to them. Anyway, they never put a penny into the game to begin with. And if it's for tax, it's the same thing. So put an affidavit and file it there and see what happens. And also
addition to that, and this is the crazy part, I've received numerous mortgage rate declarations via email, and they call all day. It's almost like harassment. And they're calling about the very property that was foreclosed on. And I'm asking them, can't you see that this property that you're trying to get me to refinance is occupied by someone? It's as if they can't see it. So I don't know exactly what that means, but I would like for someone, if they're on this call, to explain to me how, and they're calling from other states, to try to get me to refinance this particular property. That was one thing I really had a burning question about.
I think the problem is, again, your property is listed in certain places for certain reasons for a certain amount of time, and then it moves to another. They're playing a game. It's a shell game.
Yes.
Okay? And really, they want to make it look like you're forfeiting the property. They got to make
right.
it look like that before they make the move and complete without a court of law. You see, they even understand what they're doing is thievery. By doing all these exercises, and they use the process of what's called in rem again to do the same
right.
thing. So,
but John, I wanted to know, for instance, I noticed these sites that are set up for petitions, and I wanted to know, did anyone here ever consider doing a petition for the reinstatement of Article 3 Court's due process of law, bringing it back into the constitutional fold?
We never even considered that, and we still wouldn't, because we need to take it into the courts and deal with it, because this subversion here, they're only going to ignore that. That's all they're going to do.
With thousands and thousands of signatures, you think they would ignore that?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they have an agenda. They're not going to give it up. Look at, you know, see what's going on in Washington and what Trump is doing right now to these people. And the only thing they could do is just continue to build the lie and get as many mindless people as possible to follow the lie and rile them up for one reason or another. You know, if you watch what's going on the other side there, you know, they find out what immorality is that they like. And they'll press those people, and they'll come out into the streets, and they'll yell about it, whether it be abortion or whether it be, you know, marriage for the homosexual or, and they even, you know, there's things even in there trying to push, and they've been trying to do this for a long time, is getting pedophilia, you know, lawful somehow. I mean, I don't know how they go about doing that one, but they're actually out there doing those kind of things. And so everybody has this agenda, their little thing that they want, and they go along with the whole status. And they have no idea they're selling themselves off into slavery, and they have no idea where the end results for them is on this, too. They have no idea. They think they're going to get what they want at the end of the time. It's not going to happen. But
would you have a problem if I was to use the same information that's going to – it's already filed in a case anyway – to go to this particular office, this SDAT for the state of Maryland office, as part of my affidavit as well, that I have not sold any property to anyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure I understand the question.
A copy of my case.
Okay. You mean you filed for an unjudicial foreclosure?
Yes.
For us to do papers for that?
Yes.
Absolutely. Use that wherever you can. It's filed. You can make the point that it's filed in a court case, and you give them the court number. Of course, they're going to go look it up, and they're going to see the notes that that one judge that came in thought he's God or something, you know. But the chief judge came in and took control of the court and just closed it down. Like what authority has he got from that? How was he chosen to come into this case? You know, this is all supposed to be by lottery. A judge doesn't say, hey, I want that case because, you know, I got a political, agenda here that I want to make sure is taken care of or whatever. But that's what's going on. But the thing is they're still taking our papers. They're not sending it back. We've informed the clerks, and the clerks are not sending them back. We told the clerks, hey, let the judge send them back. Let him break the law. You need to obey the law. And it seems that that's what they're doing. I think they're afraid to send it back, and they're letting it into the hand of the judge. But once the clerk takes it, I think the judge is frightened to take it and put it back to send it to him, because he's only burying himself more. And I'm sure he may even be listening, you know, from time to time, probably has somebody here listening to what we're doing. And he's going to jail eventually. Get that message out to him. He is going to go to jail.
And it's considered filed.
It
is considered filed in a federal court.
That's right. That's the point we're making. It's been filed and it sits.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll yield the floor.
Right. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Let's see who is next here. Okay, 937, first name and state.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, go right ahead. What's your first name and your state?
First name is Kim. State is Ohio.
Okay, Kim from Ohio.
Question I have is, well, I'm going to be as brief as possible.
Jim, hold on a minute. Jan, we're getting some noise from your end. Mute your mic, maybe. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. We have a very serious situation here. Myself and my children, who are adults, have been indicted. One of my sons is incarcerated. He has been since November 27th of this year. And the rest of us have a warrant for arrest. Now, there's no probable cause for this. The information that they have used to concoct this indictment actually comes from quiet titles that we filed in the courts regarding adverse possession. During the process of litigating these complaints inside of the court, trial court, we have run into judges who were biased, who didn't understand common law. They would make comments like,
well, I think they understand it more than they're saying, but go ahead.
They would make comments like, you can do this and you could have done this in England in 1800s, but not in America, you know, that kind of thing. So we were, you know, just very polite and asked, well, what law do you have that says we can't? Because, you know, you show us the law, you show us the statute, and we'll abide by it. But as far as our research has led us, common law is alive, and there are statutes that actually support it. So we didn't see the
problem. Well, it's the law of the land. It's in the Bill of Rights.
Well, the people here are, the judges here, they've, like, went in, the prosecutor, everybody. And it's like we weren't getting any movement with them, any relief. And what I did was filed a notice of void judgment. After filing that, within 11 days, I got a response from the prosecuting attorney, and he filed a answer saying that they had jurisdiction because what we've done is challenge the jurisdiction, the court's jurisdiction, from day one. And he said that they had original jurisdiction, of which, you know, I understand that, but that's only over justiciable issues. And the indictment alleges that we have violated.
What court is this, by the way? Is this a state court?
Yes, common pleas,
okay.
Yes. The indictment is saying that we violated the statutes of theft, unauthorized use of property, and tampering with records. Anybody who knows anything about adverse possession at all knows that that has to be unauthorized. If it's adverse possession, you don't have permission. And, it, for lack of better words, it is legal theft. There's a statutory period here in Ohio, 21 years, and if a true owner of the property comes forward, then there's either an eviction or an ejection process. So there is process in civil law that, you know, handles the situation. But for whatever reason, they have taken this and made it criminal, and they've done it without any supporting statutes. My son has been incarcerated again since November 27th, and he has challenged subject matter jurisdiction. He has a court hearing tomorrow.
Well, who made the arrest on the others that are in jail now? Did the sheriff do that?
I think my son was arrested by a sheriff, but the other ones were like local police departments.
Mm-hmm. But now they're in county jail, though, so the sheriff's holding them.
Yes, Sheriff Neal, Jim Neal.
Okay,
yes.
Very interesting, because you know what? If you move this into federal court and you sue these people for violations under U.S. 42, U.S. 18, and, of course, constitutional, you know, basically Bill of Rights, jurisdiction, due process, and you got a slew of stuff it sounds like you can really lay out here. And you went into federal court with this, and you went up against the sheriff, you went up against the judge, and you went up against the prosecutor, and anyone else that touches this case, if it's a police department, city police department or town or whatever, you go after that too. You know, you just put them into a quagmire there, because I don't think they can even arrest you.
You know,
I know, you know, I learned a long time ago when I was doing construction and I was working for this big contractor doing construction management for him, and I was working with his lawyers, and he was ready to go almost belly up, and one of the things he did, and the lawyer was explaining to me, is we're suing everybody. You know, even the good guys were suing everybody, because if you sue everybody, nobody can come at you with other legal action at all, because it's now in a court and nobody could do anything. And so what he did is he tied everybody up from trying to get the money from this guy, which gave him time, because it takes a while to go through this court system, in order to make money and pay off his debt and move on. And he was able to do that. It was successful. When I went up against the IRS, I sued the sheriff, I sued the clerk, county clerk, I sued a couple of agents, I sued numerous individuals that John Doe's, Mary Doe's, and I sued the director. I think that, I'm not sure what they call the title, but it may be director of the IRS, and I sued the IRS, and I sued my bank. Okay.
But you know what
and
they've
why
done.
Why did I sue? I sued all of those individuals, froze them up. Sheriff couldn't go take my money. Clerk couldn't pursue anything. The bank couldn't give any information out without a subpoena. They couldn't give my money over to anyone. I just froze everyone up just by bringing everyone and suing everyone. And I'm not. And I wasn't expecting to win a suit against anyone other than the IRS. Those are the only people I was interested in. Actually, I should have pushed the case to the limit. But in any event, it protected me, because everyone was froze up in a court case and they couldn't do nothing. So that's
state?
Something you might be able to consider doing. And I don't want to say that you're going to sue everybody and they're not going to arrest you, because they may still come to court and arrest you there. So I don't know.
Well, we've prepared. We started the process of preparing the 42, and I have the state in there as well, because these people are agents for the state. I am suing them in their individual capacities, but I wasn't sure if the state should be named in the actual lawsuit. And one of the things that they're doing is they are forbidding.
Well, you know, you can sue the state. Let me think about this a minute. Well, you can't sue the state, I don't think, in general. You got to find an individual that you can put the weight onto. Look, if you have an IRS problem and you find the director of that IRS has policies and procedures, and these people are operating under those policies and procedures, and those policies and procedures are damaging to me, that person's responsible. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I sue the top guy and the other people on the lower level that's responsible. But I go for the top guy. You always go for the top guy. Here in New York, we're not suing the state of New York or New York State, two different entities, by the way. We are suing the governor, and we're suing all of the legislators, both houses, on the gun issue here in New York. And it's personal. We want money. We want damages. You frightened us, and you continue to fear, put us in fear. You've infringed upon our right to have a weapon. I can't go and just grab my weapon because I need it. I need my weapon now, but I got to go through 3-month process. I'm dead by then, you know, if I needed my weapon. So, you know, again, they're all you got to go after the individuals responsible. So you don't want to go to the state generally. Now we've sued, you know, they try to play the game. Oh, you got to get permission. Yeah, well, we don't get permission. We're the people, and we move on. And you know what? That went very quickly. They didn't even push that argument. They saw where we were going, I think, and they didn't want it in the court case.
You know, they're not allowing us to file papers in the court any longer. There's one judge in particular, Judge Rule.
Well, you got to get out of that court. That court is not a court of record. It has no authority or power over you, although they think they do. So the fear, you know, nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. They'll come out and arrest you and put you in a real jail cell, and you'll sit there. So all those things are real. But they really don't have the power, the authority to do that. In the end of the day, they got to pay for that. That abuse.
And they can do that without a statute. I mean, crime is a violation of a statute, but there's no statute.
Well, no, crime is not the violation of a statute. Crime is the violation of another individual. There must be an injured party. That's a crime. You can't say that driving without a license, which they may have a statute, you need a license to drive. But even there, they're wrong because, look, they don't even use the word, the proper wordings. I mean, well, they actually do use the proper words. But if you say that you're not driving a motor vehicle, you know, you're driving a car or something, I forget the words, you know, and I don't get involved in that too much anyway. But the point is that they don't really have the authority to arrest you and to prosecute you. There definitely is no indictment. And now they made a new rule up quite some time ago that, you know, they don't need an indictment if you're in jail less than 1 year. You know, and then you see these things going. What does the judge do? He gives you a year and a day. Why does he give you a year and a day? So you're in state prison. Well, wait a second here now. Now we need an indictment. This whole thing is worthless now, isn't it? They make the rules up as they go. They do what they want, but they play this game, and it's a very dangerous one, of course. It injures us, we the people, and we need to have restitution for that.
But in regards to statutes, if you have an indictment that says theft and you have a bill of particulars that alleges squatting, the two of those don't go together. They don't go together. So, I mean, it should be something that can, even through their statutes, you know, something should be able to...
Right, there are laws in the book for squatting, and so if that's what you're doing, then you're protected. But you're right. They do what they want. That's the evil part. Look at no one is anyone in jail right now. They haven't been indicted, right? Or have they?
Yeah, we're all indicted.
Okay, so you're all indicted. Okay,
they tried to get us one by one.
Right.
And they,
well, your position on that indictment is a stacked jury. Okay, that's your position. The jury was stacked. Okay, but. Mm. You have to make a federal issue out of it. You're not going to get anywhere in that court. You will never get anywhere in that court. As long as you're in that court. Anytime I walk into a nisi prius court, a court without authority, I walk in only for one reason, and to just test whatever it is they're talking about. Then I object, and I give them my papers, if I even have to go that far to go down to do that. But, you know, that's it. It's a one-time thing. And then they press beyond that, and then I got to think about it. Then I say, okay, is this worth my time and money and hassle to go in and fight this case? It may take me $400, $500 for filing, which I got to then fight back for that money because I'm not paying for justice. And then I got to file papers. I got to deal with all these moronic lawyers that just drive me crazy. They waste so much time on BS, and the judge does nothing about it. But you got to go through all that process too, and 8 months, 10 months later, maybe you'll get somewhere by taking it into the federal court. Or is it just easier at that point to pay the $150, because we're talking about usually a violation, traffic violation or something, you know, and then say, okay, I'll set this aside for another day, and maybe I'll pursue it collectively. Because if you got four or five or six, you know, you've been abused four or five or six times by the local courts, you then take it in collectively at another time, if that's what you want to do. But sometimes it's not worth it. You got to figure out where your battles are. Of course, you're in jeopardy of jail, so you got to make this battle. You don't have a choice. But
so
you can't fight it in that court. You'll never win.
He hasn't played, but just considering that it could be a while inside of that jail, would pleading harm him? Because he has no priors. He has $150,000 straight. You know, he has no criminal record at all. None of us do. But they've given him $150,000 straight bond.
Bond. Well, that there, again, is wrong. Look at, you know, you need to release people on their own recognizance unless that you can prove that this person probably ain't going to show back up. We're going to have to chase him. And
well,
depending on the level of the case, then they'll put a bond up for whatever they think the value of it is that will try to recover you over time and so on and so forth. But, you know, generally, but constantly they ignore all that. They just ignore it.
Yeah, they lie.
Remember, you're innocent until proven guilty.
He was a flight risk, that his bag was packed. They arrested him from work. He did not give them permission to search his vehicle, but yet they still come up with the idea that his bags were packed. He was ready to escape, and that's why his bond is so high. No evidence of a bag. They have absolutely not one shred of evidence. The evidence that they have in the bill of particulars actually are our quiet title.
Well, again, you can do an affidavit. They're not going to rebut it, and then you can move to the court.
It,
an unrebutted...
That's
just, again, one of my points, okay? But what you need to do is file the paper. And you're saying you can't do it. I understand that. But let me just make the point anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You write the affidavit and you deny this and you say this is the way it was. And now they got to rebut it. And if they don't rebut that, then it stands as truth in a court of law. There's nothing that can't come up against you. Now, of course, they're going to ignore all that. And they're gonna put the pressure on you. You can't do this. You can't do that. And they're making it up. You have every right to defend yourself. You have every right to call in whatever evidence and any witness you want. That's your unalienable right. And as part of due process, the ability to defend yourself in that court. And they're not gonna let you. They just are not going to let you because they are evil. Now they don't think that they're evil. They think they're nice people. They got children. They go home and their mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and children and all this other stuff. But when you look down to the heart, the lack of compassion, the lack of empathy towards evil that they're applying upon you, they are evil.
Yeah,
I don't care how you put it. That's what they are. And now you're not going to win in that court. You cannot go to that court. You have to make a federal case out of it. You have no choice.
Well, then my son,
and there's no other way to do it.
And how long is that process in terms of them federal even looking at it?
Immediately, as long as you do it right and you can get into the court, okay, and that's another game. You know, that's another thing that you have to worry about because, you know, the federal courts do not want to hear cases. And you just make one little flaw, and they'll throw the case out, okay? The Supreme Court has ruled and very much agreeable with it, and the only thing necessary for a prima facie case is an affidavit. That's the only thing necessary. Ah, you don't have your cause of action and this and that. And I do understand you have to have a logical case. You have to lay it out, and you have to show your injuries and so on and so forth. And that's logical. But an affidavit lays a lot of that out, and you can be in more details once you get into the court and give a lot more information and fulfill the need. Otherwise, the court can be, case can be thrown out. But what they'll look for, the last time I went into the court and filed the paper on a federal level, the guy said to me, he says, look, you know, you got to put a statute here. Why don't you put U.S. 42 or this, that, the other thing, you know, acting under the color of law. And I said, well, I've already got that inside the case. Well, then good, put that there. So I obliged him in order to get the paperwork in. But with it, I also put directly constitutional violations and named the amendments in the Bill of Rights that that they violated. And, of course, my papers expound on all of that. So I'll give them their statute. So you want to get a statute. You want a cause of action, you know, whatever it is that you're dealing with them. You know, if it has a title, you go up and look on the cause of action to make sure you hit all of the necessary things for causes of action. The other big thing that they like to try to throw your cases out, and sometimes the judge will throw it out even though it doesn't meet it, but you got to prevent it from happening. And one of the things, probably the best thing to do is have it served by a sheriff. You know, I serve a lot of papers, put a lot of papers in, do it through the U.S. mail. And, you know, you get the affidavit of service, the person deposited it, see in the package, put it in, and deposited it into the mail. Plus, you have, yeah?
I think here on the application it says that if you get the indigency, pay through indigency form, that the marshals actually serve it.
Well, that may be true. I don't know what the rules are on that. In some cases, the marshals do have to serve the papers. And I forget under what the criteria on that is. You know, again, you got the rules. You go and you read the rules. And remember, some of these rules are not constitutional. You know, I don't, you know, I'll deny certain rules and argue against them, could not apply them. But if it doesn't mean nothing and it's not a big thing, I'll use them. But generally, most of the rules are pretty good. But they are sowed with treason, okay? You got to be very careful because they very, very easily move you over into that out-of-sea law, or, you know, maritime law, you know. They move you over into that direction there, and before you know it, you're in the wrong court. And you got to constantly be on guard to maintain your Article III court. I'm very specific. This is an Article III court.
Are you talking federal court?
Well, you have no choice.
No, I'm saying in terms of moving you into...
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. Well, look at even the local courts are trying you at sea. I mean, they operate in rem. If they took your property, they've operated in rem to do it. That's the only way they can do it. And yet they don't even... They have nowhere to file it, which is very interesting because, look at, in order for the federal courts to do it, they have to file that in rem process at the federal building, you know, in that district. And if it's not filed there, there is no case. There is no lien. There's nothing. And you know what? They never file it. And so when you go before the court, for instance, if you're battling the IRS and you go into the court and you say, look, this is just a notice of lien and it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, it doesn't mean nothing, and so on and so forth, And the other side will say, well, look, we served these papers, and that's it. And it's filed with the county court clerk and so on and so forth. And the judge is looking at you. You say nothing else. So he's got to go along with what he heard. And it's been filed properly. You know, what you got to do is you got to bring up the necessary paperwork. There are two forms required in order to proceed according to REM. Okay? And under certain conditions, and one of it is a proof of claim, and the other is having fiduciary authority over the person or the item, you know, the property or something, and it's got to be filed in the federal court. So you waive the papers. That's what I did. You waive the papers in the court. You know, I didn't see any of these things filed, and I went down. They have nothing on record down there, and all you got was silence in the court. They moved on, but. You know, that played a very, very heavy position in my court case, and that's why I was able to deal with it and win
it. Is there a 42 sample somewhere that I could maybe move against mine to check, just for check the balance?
What do you mean a 42?
just a civil action that I can, a model, something, a sample, something I can see to bounce
off. Yeah. Well, look at, you know, you can look at all of our court cases up on our docket page. I mean, we've come under from so many different positions, and you can kind of utilize those ideas. It's very, you know, look at, I don't want to get involved in teaching people. We could discuss these things. I give people ideas, but they have to learn, and I can, you know, show them different places they can go to learn and get the necessary information. But they love to come out after people who are teaching things. And try to build a case against them.
One of the properties
I've been very careful with that, huh?
One of the properties that we adverse is a former nursing home. And that's my background. That's my history. I'm a cultural anthropologist, and that's primarily what I do. I teach. Mm-hmm. So when the detectives came, or the police officers came, trying to arrest my daughters to find out about me, they were asking about where my family was, where I was, and they knew everything about me. They knew about my history in terms of community, civics, teaching, all of that. So I know that that has a lot to do with the fact that we are a family, and you know, moving forward, and also just trying to educate the community. And we've primarily done culture and arts. Law is something relatively new for me. I've only been studying for the last, I would say, maybe 2 to 3 years. And I've had to learn because I've had to defend certain situations.
Right. Well, you sound like you're capable of doing these things. Listen, go out to the page where we have our docket and read. First of all, reading those cases is an education, ultimately in common law, in Constitution, founding fathers. I mean, history. It's an education. All of that together in civics. So read through that. Look at our memorandums very particular, specifically. You know, we have about 8 or 10 memorandums up there, and you could probably use most of them in your court case. You just kind of work it around your case. That's all. You change the personal information into your case, but you can use the framework off of that. And you know, I try to set up a case to cover everything in memorandums, you know, so that we understand what the law is in this case that we're dealing with. I want them to understand the jurisdiction we're in. I want them to understand that this is an Article III court, those are two major points. An Article III court ultimately is the jurisdiction, but that this is a court of record, and that's what an Article III court is. But these are all done in memorandums so that when you have the memorandum, you could make the sentence or two making the point and the conclusion and refer to the memorandum as backup for that. And you keep your case, you know, then trimmed and minimum words. Don't be redundant. I read through my papers over and over and over again, and I'm constantly pulling things out. Oh, I didn't really have to add that in. I didn't really need to add this in. Or maybe I put this sentence in. I can pull out three sentences. You know, things like that. You know, it's massaging. The key to good writing is rereading and correcting 20 times. And then after you do it 20 times, do it 20 more times. And you keep doing it until you have to finally file.
What do I find on your site? National
Liberty Alliance.org.
Okay.
And let me open the page, get you directly there where you got to go. Come under, I think it's grand jury. Hang on. Yeah, you'll see grand jury, highlight grand jury, and about three down, you click on docket. And right above docket, there are three landmark Supreme Court cases. You might want to read through them. You know, there's
okay.
a few. I don't know how many there are, but there's a few landmark cases that may be helpful. You know, take a highlighted, print them out, take a highlighted, you know, a highlighter, and highlight anything that you think is important. You can lift it up and put it into your case. Under docket, you'll find a lot of cases. You're going to find a lot of footnotes and everything. And again, you want to speak with footnotes. You want to be absolutely crystal clear. There is no misunderstanding. What we're doing when you do that is you're removing their protection, what they think is their protection. Because, again, they have all these little things in unconstitutional statutes and laws and stuff, and if you're called this instead of that, they feel more comfortable, so they'll call you a citizen maybe, or a person. And when you correct that and say, no, I'm one of the people of New York or whatever state you're from, and you kind of neutralize that, those words, which really doesn't amount to a hill of beans anyway on the one hand, but what it does do, it gives them comfortability to be able to rule in a certain way because they think that their fraud is going to be able to protect them and if they should be caught. But once you maneuver around all that and you prevent all that, one thing, first of all, they understand that you understand the game that they're doing. That's the first thing. Okay? The next thing is, well, I wonder what this guy is going to know or do if I defraud him in the court now because he played this game pretty well. You got the judge wondering who you are and what you know. And you must always maintain that. Once the judge is comfortable with you and he feels he knows you are, what you can and cannot do, that's it. You know, we have surprised the court so many times that you think that they've come back with something that has now blocked us from going, and we've come back and we've reopened the doors and keep moving on. And again, you know, it's easy to go after evil and find all those ways to get back into the game because they have to work with lies and evil things to do what they do, and you just expose them along the way.
Now, that's what we did when they said that we could not file any more documents at the courthouse. Here at the Justice Center, after the courthouse is closed.
Well, again, that there is a violation right there. You should put that in an affidavit and make sure that's into the case. But it should also tell you, you're not going anywhere in this court. You're not going to win in that court. It's just not going to happen. You got to get out of that court.
I have got to get my son out of that jail.
Well, you can move with a habeas corpus, see
they
about trying to get that through. Huh?
He's been trying to get one out of jail. No one inside of the jail will actually take it, so we wrote one on behalf of him and filed it, and it's sitting there. So that's before, you know, it's right after that.
Well, again, you know, you may have done something in a way that they see is wrong, and they say it's not a real effort. It's not a habeas corpus. There was no certain.
Couldn't file a habeas in state court. It was federal. So what I did was refiled it and showed her where the trial court, you know, where it.
Did you lay out 3 days that they had to answer within 3 days, produce the body, which is what a habeas corpus is? Everything's got to lay out. See, what we did here is they always look for an authority, an approval, which it shouldn't be necessary, but some judge has got to approve it. So we bypassed that by getting the grand jury to approve it. You see, they really can't buck up against that too much.
So how do you get that record to the grand jury if you're just filing with the courts?
Well, again, we were doing habeas corpuses, but we stopped doing them right now because we don't have the, you know, we're trying to get back into doing it. We really are. But until we can get it where it's moving like a nice, clean machine, geared up and oiled and moving along, until we can get it there, we really can't move back into it. Because then, you know, if we have lots of errors or things are out of joint or something was misseen applied or something, it needs to be caught. And until I can feel comfortable, I got to read every one of them. I got to spend time with it. I got too many things to do than to do that. You know, that's not the purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to just do habeas corpuses nor to defend people. You know, that's not what we're here for. We're trying to educate people, get people to work together to save this nation, deal with this problem, and then you can come back for justice once we get just courts again. Remember, there is no statute of limitation in a court of law, in a common law. There's no statutes. Only statutes that are permitted there are lawful statutes, and that's you know, really defined in the Constitution, in Article 1, Section 8.
Wow.
So, okay. You know, study, but start thinking. Read those papers. You'll get an education, no doubt. I'm sure you'll be able to find a lot of things. You use the memorandums. Memorandums will build your case. You'll see how to use footnotes and bring that all together to make crystal clear the meanings of your words. You put them into a box, and you're really working. You see, I'm always in there fighting the judge. I already won the other side. Clear. There's nothing to talk about there. But it's always the judge. It's a chess game between you and the judge.
Yeah, and I'm not understanding.
They're always status quo.
He's supposed to be the impartial.
Right, exactly. It's supposed to be, but that's the problem we have. It's status quo. They're political animals, and they're gonna find for the state every single time, or the elite every single time, big corporations every single time.
Hmm.
Because if they don't, they're gonna get in trouble.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, we need to move on because we got other people, and
very helpful.
Come back and ask more questions, but go read those things.
I will.
Yeah?
All right.
And if you go into federal court, read through the rules very carefully. There is a lot to read through on the one hand, but you really don't have to read it all. You know, there's certain sections, I don't need this, I have to read through that. But be careful with the in rem part of the process where they try to snag you and bring you into a different court, a wrong jurisdiction. But, you know, read through the federal rules, and wherever you feel comfortable and that this works with the common law, use those rules and apply them. And these judges don't like when you come in and don't use their rules, well, the rules of the court, you know, which is the federal rules. They don't like it when you come into the court and don't use the federal rules. And they're always beaten up. I've seen, you know, it's been our experience that they beat up on these lawyers that come in from the state level and never filed in the federal court. And they're doing it maybe the first or second time, and the judge hollers at them. You know, but you know, so be the one that works the rules out, and then the chess game is on.
Okay.
Every word, every word in that court by that judge has a meaning and a purpose. Every word, you note everything he said, and even when he said nothing to worry about and said nothing, you know, you read it and think about it and meditate on it because it means something.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. Let's see. It is 717.
Hello?
How you doing? What's your first name and your state?
Well, my name's Jim. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Jim from Pennsylvania. Go right ahead, Jim.
Hey, first I want to thank you guys for your cause. I'm glad I found you. I've been searching and studying and a lot of other sites aren't really decent.
A lot of poison out there. Be careful. Because I studied in my beginning, is that's where I learned a lot of what I learned. And I got hurt by a lot that I learned. And I started to realize. And I have to, you know, whatever they say, you gotta do your homework.
Yeah, I take nothing at face value. However, I have kind of, are you familiar with Judge David Wynn Miller?
No, not. I don't think so.
Okay, he's a former federal judge. Anyhow, of course, I'm sure we're all very well of the Masonic presence of the, you know, these powers that be. And as I've studied on, you know, because I'm trying to cover every angle here because I do have a case, and I really don't really want to get into that because I see that, of course, this is bigger than me. And I'll do everything I can.
Well, there was a judge out there that wrote a book. I don't think it's that guy. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. But he wrote a book and exposed everything and what's really going on in the federal courts and all that stuff. But the problem is that they're really setting you. That judge, the one I'm talking about, really is working for the enemy. Because he fed so much BS on what to do, you know?
Yeah, well, he does kind of expose the what you don't see in the courtroom that's going on, the architecture and the vessel at dry dock, things like that.
Bear in mind, that book is written for the people who understand what he's talking about and begin with people who are starting to understand those things and are going to go make their battle with the court. And so those are the people that read that book. And then once they read the book and he says certain things on how to deal with it, how to build a defense or how to position yourself and make the points of what positions they're holding and how to make that whole battle, okay?
Yes,
all
sir.
Of that is baloney. It's not the way to fight. You don't fight a court in their sandbox. You bring them into your sandbox.
After that, it wasn't. He was just getting, you know, bits and pieces, nothing real detailed. So
right.
You know, I journeyed on and searched on Mark Christopher, Dean Clifford up in Canada, who just knows what he is, sovereign, and just is savage about it. And they lock him up. They block a lot of his content down here in the States. There's Santos Bonacci out in Australia. Australia's got a big movement going on. I have a copy of the United States Constitution in front of me right now, and I also have a copy of the Pennsylvania Constitution. And I wanted to read something out of this and then bring something like full circle real quick. I think it says this calls in at midnight. But Section 2 of the Pennsylvania Constitution, was important really because it was a forefront that a lot of states adopted the Constitution from Pennsylvania. And it says clearly, all powers is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness. For the advancement of these ends, they have all at all times an inalienable and feasible right to alter, reform, abolish their government in such manner as they may think proper. The problem is through time, they've dissolved all that knowledge there's no civics courses in school and so on and so on. So now, hence
this. You know, you got to keep the slaves dumb, otherwise they'll figure out how to be free and they'll fight with you. So
right.
Keep
well,
the slaves dumb. We got to be dumb. Got to give them. You got to give them little electronic things. They walk around and the only thing they know is how to tweet. You know, they can't say any more than 10 words at a time. And this is a major problem. I'm going to tell you right now. I can't tell you how many people, you know, they get frustrated with me because they want me to get to the point. They can't possibly even know what I'm talking about unless I give them a little bit of an education in the conference in our
right.
conversation. And if it's more than 10, 20 words, you know, it's like looking into the deer's eyes. They fall asleep. You know, the deer's eyes looking into a head.
I sleep 2 hours a day. I'm so embellished in this. For the past 2 months, it's been nonstop, and I'm fine with. I see what's there. You know, it's not for me to just win my upcoming case. It's to win our freedom back. It's already there. We just got to
right.
take it back. I see that clearly. You know, but I'm going to fast forward now. This was back with 1776 when this was written or whatever. Now let's fast forward to 2000, and I'll just give you a brief little history. Okay, I got a DUI. I spent 8 years in and out of jail on probation for one DUI. Now fast forward to this case I have now, driving on under suspended license, and because I'm driving on suspended, they automatically hit me with a DUI and say .02. Don't even breathalyze me.
You got to make a federal case out of it. The only way is this is a town court?
This is the Benjamin Franklin County, man. These people are so corrupt.
It's an administrative court is what they're operating under.
Well, it's a criminal case, and I'm in the process of the motion. I'm just a little confused with challenging jurisdiction.
Were you indicted?
I have the charges here. I got charges with a DA signature on it who don't even work there.
Was there a sworn affidavit by the arrested individual?
Yes.
Was there a witness
officer.
Of an individual, a sworn affidavit? We're not talking about I swear and signing his name. We're talking about
the judge's signature. Yes, sir. He wrote an affidavit. Yes, sir.
Okay. So they got something right anyway. But here's the bottom line, okay? You can't go to jail. It's not a crime to break a statute.
I did go to jail. I already spent 2 weeks.
But I understand people go to jail because they think that they have the power and the authority to put them in jail. And they do what they do, but they don't really have that authority.
They're trying to give me 6 months to 5 years for this, man.
Your only way to deal with this, if you were listening to the caller before, okay,
yeah.
Same kind of principles. You got to move this into a federal court. You'll never win in that court.
So it's a waste of time to try to file a motion challenging jurisdiction in this, Franklin?
Absolutely. You know, when I was learning this stuff, we'd get hooked up for 8 months in a silly court and still not get anywhere, still having to go back and dealing with this because the judge, I'm going to make a ruling on this. I got jurisdiction.
Right.
Let's move on. Right. I mean, how much, and we're going to fall for that? Look, you just say it once. Don't be redundant. You don't have to say it 10 times. You said it once, it's on the record, you move on to the next step. The next step is to take it into another court. The only court, at this point, you got to go into the federal court because they have the jurisdiction over this. Why? Because they're violating your right of due process and not giving it. You can't get in that court, so you got to go here. This is the court that can hear that. They're violating your right, not only of due process, they don't have jurisdiction, okay?
Right.
What's
the first step I need to? Do you have any kind of reference for me? I'm writing it down right now. I can go directly to get into that.
Well, basically, you got to go into. I'm sure you're familiar with U.S. 42 and 18 with acting under the color of law and all that stuff. You're familiar with those?
No, sir. I'm not. I'm on the web.
243,
so.
Huh?
Okay. I'm on the. I'm on the website. Is there any references there?
Yeah, there is a place on the website where I put a lot of my notes. I don't remember where it is. It should be under the educational tab area. And when you fish around there, you'll find something on court access. And then you dig a little deeper on that, and there's sort of a book on court access that we put together. And with that is, I think we have some dictionaries in there. I have a group of notes, okay? They're called footnotes, all right, that I've made over the years. You also should see some U.S. codes and probably some state codes. I'm in New York, so they're New York state codes. But you'll see some federal codes. And in the federal codes, you'll see, we're acting under the color of law, violating constitutional right, coming out on the highway, and so on and so forth. And
that was traveling. I was traveling. I was not engaged in commerce, so.
Well, look, you're always on the highway, okay? As soon as you walk out your door, you're on the highway, okay?
Sure. Yes,
so,
sir.
And whether you're driving, walking, or whatever, you're out on the highway. And they come up and they come under the color of law. They got their uniforms on saying, I got authority, I got a badge here, I got a gun on my side, I got authority. And then they apply things that are not law to you. That's acting under the color of law. Okay?
Right.
And so anyway, you'll see that in U.S. 42 and U.S. 18. I think it's 243, 242. You look under the 18 U.S. codes 18 and 42, and read all of those that we have in there because you'll find these things I'm talking about. They're in there, and there's not that many, but they're in there. And those are the things you use to get into the federal court.
Okay.
Remember, you have to go. You have to move. You move that case into the federal court for cause, cause, for cause. And what's the cause? It's a constitutional violation. And they want to see a federal, they want to see a U.S. code, so you can give them those U.S. codes.
So, and then I would, so would I file that at the local courthouse?
No, you serve it on the judge. You're going after the judge and the prosecutor and anyone else that's violating your rights. It's trying to lock you up.
Okay. So I do file it to the local court, and then they're noticed that, hey, I'm ready, I'm willing to take this.
You're going to file this in the federal court, and you're serving them. Of course, you'll serve the court, too. I would sue the court directly. That kind of binds them up for continuing, but you're moving it. The fact that you're moving it in for cause, that should bind up the court, so you serve it on the court. And then you're going up against the judge, and you want to chase them for damages, too. Put some money values in there. Just don't be ridiculous,
Yeah, that's what I was.
No one's going to give you $1 billion.
No, I was like $1. I was writing the motion, and, of course, I was just trying to – I wasn't really connecting the two and two. How do I – okay, so challenge jurisdiction, and then motion for that, and then at the same time –
jurisdiction can only be challenged in another court because they're not going to listen. You're not even challenging it. You're making the point. They don't have jurisdiction. Okay. There is no injured party. Move into the common law side of things.
Right.
There is no injured party. Okay.
Yeah.
They don't have the power or the authority to stop me on the road, to arrest me, to put me into a court and take control of my life, put me in jail. They don't have this power and authority. They are an administrative court. It's a Nisi Prius court.
Man, the jail here is overpopulated with just, I mean, the smallest thing. Okay, yeah, you got some bad folks in there, but 90% is just the DUIs, driving under suspended, stuff like that, man. It's terrible.
There was a judge, his name was Judge Bork, in the 80s, and I think it was Reagan who chose him to become the United States Supreme Court, and he didn't make it through because he was just way too strong. He was a Scalia, you know? And he never made it in, but he made a statement, and he says that the reason 80% of the people that are in jail, he might have said 90%, but I'll say 80% of the people who are in jail are there because they opened their mouth. Okay?
Right.
A Nisi Prius court requires you to respond. You got to reject, deny responding to them. You're there to test the waters in that court to see if there's anything to it. And you're here by special appearance, and then you give the court the correction. You let them know, well, look at, you know, you guys really don't have the power, the authority, this or that, the other thing. They'll laugh at you and just throw that aside and move on. Now they violated you. Now it's time to go to federal court. You should have been to federal court a long time ago.
So, see, I have court the 19th, so when I go before the judge, just say I'm here on special visit and I'm ready to move this to federal court?
Well, I wouldn't tell them that because they'll try to put you in jail real quick.
Oh,
so okay. I would not let him know anything at this
point. Right.
You've been in there too many times already to start talking. When you use that the special appearance, he may be aware of that from other people who've come in and say, oh, okay, I see where this guy's going. And now you've opened up your strategies to him. No, if I take anyone, if I move a court into a federal court for cause, they're not going to know about it until they get the papers served.
Okay, so file the paperwork, try to get it in there, like, on demand, the federal.
Right. Your best thing is keep as silent as you can in that court, and whenever you open your mouth, it should be with the words, I object.
Okay, so write it up to the federal court certified, mail it to them, and then that court will serve them with papers, or I need to serve this?
No. You need, you need more of an education here, I see now. No matter what, whether you can get this education in time before and how much time you can get to stall this court, you need to know how to get into a federal court. You need to know how to file papers in court. There is a course called Jurisdictionary. And you go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and on the right side, you should see Jurisdictionary. Okay, click on that, and you need to buy the course. It's $249. We did not make that.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, we did not create that course. That's the course I found years ago where I learned how to write papers and get into the court. Okay, that's how I learned the process, through that course. And so it's $249, okay? And if we had written that course, then we would give it away for free because often we think about selling what we got. You know, we've got the civics course, we have a constitutional course, we have lots of information and pages, education, which numerous times it was brought up, well, maybe we should close these off unless people become paid members. And we thought about that because we need money to continue, but then we also realized that, you know, freely that I've been given, so freely we got to give, number one. But number two, we don't want to deprive people of access to these things, and money will deprive them. So we've reversed it. You know, we ask everyone, give us $5 a month or more and just support us, you know. But nevertheless, everything we have is free. But if we didn't write it, we didn't write that course. But it's the best course. It's the only course I know of that can really teach people how to get into the courts and win. It teaches you what causes of actions are, what the elements of a cause of action and the necessary paperwork, the summons. It talks about the rules of the court and all of the forms that you would use to get into the federal court already in the federal rules. Okay, so if you go get yourself the federal rules, a PDF copy, we have it on our website. download a PDF copy of the federal rules. It's about 180 pages, if I remember. It's not, it's big, but it's not that big. But a lot of it you can skip through, you know, go through the titles. You'll find a place where forms, and look at the forms. And it just gives you the information on what information is required on a particular form. You often, you know, I create my own forms all the time. But a lot of times I'll go on the internet and I'll say example for form for this, or example of form for that, example of an indictment, example of this. And then I'll be able to go to a lot, you know, you go to a lot of sites and you can get a lot of examples, okay, of how these things were written by other people. And then, you know, I take the best out of that. But you got to work. If the federal form says you need this piece of information, you can't not give that piece of information. You got to make sure it's on that form. Okay. And
yes,
forms, that you could purchase forms. Well, you can write your own. I create my own forms all the time. My forms are better because I add stuff into it that's common law.
Right. I'll go right to federal rules, and you planted a seed there. And I thank you for that. Now, my question is, I have another question, and it's completely off subject of my stuff. I'm not here for myself. You said something about the indictment with Jeff Sessions. And of course, I understand donating is the greatest thing I can do, and I will be donating. Now, is that something that I can just research into, study, learn it, and then take it door to door and educate the people?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Try to frame it again.
An indictment, you guys have an indictment on somebody.
Right. We have a big indictment coming out. It combines, it's one case, but it combines three different cases in three different places. One is the Bundy Ranch case, the Hammonds case out there in Oregon, and the Wildlife Preserve case in Oregon. They're all connected. It's all the same thing. And then the murder of Lavoie Finnegan, the assassination. So there are kind of four different things. Huh?
How can I help with just teaching, educating the people here? How can I help do that? Where do I find that?
Well, look, when the indictment is finally filed, we're working on putting it together right now. The indictment is brought together, so I was hoping to have it done before this meeting, but I realized that we really got to frame this one out well. And so I'm really looking at a lot of different examples, and I want to get all the information necessary inside here. But in any event, when we file it, we will send out to our membership the knowledge of the fact we filed it, so everybody will know then. And then the next Monday's meeting, call here, we'll make the announcement that it's been filed and where it's at, and you'll be able to find it. It'll be up on the docket page, which is nationallibertyalliance.org. Go to highlight grand jury, come down to docket, it'll be on that page. And so all that information there, you know, you'll be able to pull that down and get a copy of that. And you might want to get people to come out to the website, to that page, to read that, or get a copy and hand it to people, a radio station, or we need to get this to go viral.
Yeah, there's a local radio station here, so I will, you know what, that's a good idea. I will go down there and talk to them. It's right in town.
You can feed them right directly to the website. They can download all our paperwork, you know.
Is there any reason you guys don't like implore Magna Carta? Because it's just something we don't know?
Oh, no, we use the Magna Carta.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I think Brent Winters has a series on the Magna Carta. I'm pretty sure I heard him say that. I should go look that up myself. Magna Carta is kind of different or odd to look at because we're not used to the language that they used back then.
Right.
But it is the principle of the common law. You know, it lays out the principles.
Yeah, I watched a movie recently on that, and it was, of course, it was romanticized and all, but I got the meat and potatoes out of that. So, okay, well, hey, man, I wish all you guys, strength of spirit and good health. I'll continue listening if you guys are on air here, and I'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, it's late, but we did start a little late, so we'll take another caller. Let's see, 847-975, first name and state. You've been unmuted.
Hi, Jared. Chuck from Illinois.
How you doing? What's your first name?
Chuck.
Chuck. Chuck from Illinois.
Yes. Thanks again for all the info. I'll try to make it concise.
And by the way, anybody that's listening in that this information is helpful to, or the people I was speaking to and it's helpful to, well, this will be posted tonight. Tomorrow or later tonight, you'll be able to download this and rerun this MP3. So we and you'll find that right on our Monday page below the instructions to find us here. So every meeting we have is recorded, and so if there's vital information that's new to you and it's hard to take notes and keep up, we'll go back and you can rewind, and get all the information down. That's what I used to do when I used to learn by tapes. I love to learn by tapes because you can pause it and rewind it and get every piece of information out of it. But go ahead. Back to you.
I was discouraged initially, some of the comments you made about the difficulty in getting through to these judges when you're presenting, you know, a good logical common law argument. But I'm thinking of a guy like Carl Miller, who has those three wonderful videos. And using his
Remember Carl Miller. Carl Miller's back from the 80s and the 90s and maybe even the early part of 2000. Every time they find an opening and a thing, you know, he pulled off a lot of good stuff and other people have done it behind him and, you know, duplicated them. But they close those ranks up and sometimes it's hard to get that stuff through. But, you know, you can still utilize the stuff. But go ahead.
Well, that's the tricky thing. I think you have to go through his videos and you have to scrupulously document the arguments that he uses, you know, the am jurisprudence backup and doing the research on the court cases so that, as he says, you can enunciate to the judge when he asks you what that case means that you just cited, that you know, you can tell him what it means and how it applies to your case.
Yeah, but remember, so, his logic today will only work in a federal court. These state courts, they're too dumb. They don't even know what you're talking about. And I'm serious with that. As sad as that might be, it's the truth.
I mean, if you are crystal clear with these arguments that he brings up in a state court, do you think it's impossible? These are administrative courts you're talking about.
Right. And if you're being held for a criminal action, you can't be held for a criminal action in an administrative court. An administrative court is an nisi prius court, and you got to understand what that means. It's a foreign court to begin with. Once it becomes a nisi prius court, it's a foreign court. And what nisi prius means is unless first, okay? When they bring a charge up against you, once you respond to that, you're now agreeing, okay? And that's what that's all about. That's why you go for as a special appearance to begin with. I'm here by a special appearance, and the judge should understand if he asks what that means. You know, basically you're here to test the waters. I don't know if this is valid. What's going on here? What's happening? Why am I here? Maybe we can explain, you know, these charges or whatever the case may be. And you know, basically you're not agreeing with anything that's going on in that court. Now, once you leave, you give the court, you know, you object to the process, you know, you don't believe that they have the authority and the jurisdiction. And if you feel that that's going to get you in trouble, you do that by paper after you leave the court, you know, because they won't come out after you because you beat up the judge on paper. But you can't really beat him up, but you'll make a schmuck out of him, you know. The thing is that you're just going to quote the law and tell them this is the way it is, and what this is and what that. They're going to ignore all that. You see, once they ignore your objection and they ignore the way you're moving the court back into a court where it needs to be justice if it is a court, or letting them know they don't have the authority, and they say, well, okay, look, we're going to put this off and we'll all be back here on the 18th of next month, and we'll see you then at 8 o'clock or 7, whatever the hell it is they say, you know. So you go back, you know. Well, no, you don't go back to that court no more. Now, it depends on what it's about, you know, how much you want to fight it and if you have to fight it. If it's criminal, you have to fight it. If it's a violation, they're trying to fine you. Well, maybe it's simple as just to pay the stupid fine if you can't. I send papers to court, and I got to say, half the time when I send a paper to court, I never hear back from that court again, ever. Half the time, I hear back, and then I just pay the fine, okay? Because I don't have the time to fight it. But if it's a criminal thing, you have to deal with it. You know, if they're claiming it's a criminal thing, you got to move it into a federal court then. You got to move it to a federal court for cause.
So even filing the paperwork ahead of time in the administrative court and then
you're
going
not gonna
in,
get anywhere. They're going to win. They're gonna,
it, going the in, whole, as you say, initially with the argument that, you know, special appearance, I object, and so forth.
The
and
case
then run
is
the
already
gamut.
Settled. The case has already been decided. You're guilty. The end result, okay. It's just going to take you through a process of time to find you guilty. Now, don't get me wrong, because you can make certain arguments. You might be able to get through to some judges, and he might throw the case out because he just doesn't want to bother with you, or you got to him. You know, I don't know. So I don't want to say you can't get to them and you can't win. I'm not taking a chance. I'm not wasting my time.
You're
if it's criminal, I'm
court.
Definitely going into federal court.
What if it's civil?
Well, like I said, if it's a fine of $150 or something, I do a little fighting, and when I realize that they're not going to let me go, I just pay the fine and move on. And then I put it in, I got a file with cases like that, and one day I may go back and sue them all collectively.
Yeah. The Carl Lentz approach. What do you think of that? He's got all kinds of success stories. Now,
well,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think he's doing.
Yeah,
I don't think he's exclusively in federal courts.
Right.
He doesn't.
Well, no,
so.
No, he's not. He's not. He stays in the court system, but he's got a little bit. He's got his niche, you know, and not everybody can have the niche that he has. He's got some charisma. He knows how to play the chess game. And so on. Now, you know, if you come back next week and start talking about him when Gerard's here, he can kind of fill me in because I've discussed some of his procedures or his strategy. And there's some strategies I disagree with. It's not a good strategy to keep. I want to be consistent. I'm never going to compromise the principles when it comes to the law and being consistent on them, and I'm not going to give up one to move a different direction. I am not going to play in anyone's sandbox, you know. You got to have your own, you got to bring them into a court of law, and if you can't get that state court to move over into a court of law and to act properly, which again, remember, at least here in New York, we have a state court and we have the county court. You know, in every county has a state court and a county court. And then we have a whole bunch of town courts and village courts and city courts and so on. And all of those courts are administrative courts. If you get stopped for, driving without a license, DWI, it's always a town court, city court, village court. Always, okay? I believe in some other places, sometimes it's a county court. But here in New York, it's always those courts. That's where they take you. State police catch you. Whatever town that they got you in, they're going to take you to that court. Okay, if the town cop gets you or a city cop gets you, well, you're in the city, you're in that town, he's going to take you to that city or town court. And that's where they apply their fraud upon you. You know, it's very difficult to win in those courts, like I say, but they don't have this authority. They don't have any authority to do this. They have no jurisdiction to do these things. And that's why you don't, at least in New York, you don't find this in a county court. You don't find this in a, in a state court. There was one guy, they tried to get him so hard, and he challenged the court, and he said, you don't have nothing, no authority. You need to get you want to get criminal charges on me, you better go back. You better go get yourself a grand jury and get an indictment. And in New York, to get an indictment on some infraction is impossible, I think. They got to find some criminal charges against you in order to do that. But criminal charges not in the sense of violating a code of some kind. Criminal trial, and they love to do this. They'll, when they see you're going to be, and they call you a wise guy or something. They see that you're going to be a wise guy with them, or give them a hard time or whatever. They'll arrest you for resisting arrest. But they're so stupid, it's pathetic. I can't tell you how many cases I've seen where the people were arrested for resisting arrest, and I said, well, go ask the question, what did they arrest you for? And they don't have an answer. How can you resist arrest if they want to arrest you? You don't even know what they were arresting you for. You know, they're so dumb, it's pathetic. So the only charge they have is resisting arrest. For what? You know, that charge never comes up. Now, sometimes, of course, it does, but most of them don't. That's how dumb they are. But nevertheless, look at, you know, here in New York, you know, the challenge was made numerous. The judge tried so hard to get this guy, and he did send it over to try to get an indictment. Of course, he couldn't get it, and didn't get it, and never did it. So, and they finally let him go. And this guy's really just a regular, you know, he's a real maverick. So, you know, and this is in his nature, and this is what he's going to do. You know, so I only go so far with those things. I just don't have the time to spend all my time fighting all those kind of things, you know. But in any event, they need an indictment. Now, in your state, you're in what state?
Illinois.
Again?
Illinois.
I don't know how things work out there, and I don't know what courts you'd be in, and you know, but nevertheless, if they're applying a statute against you, you're in an E.C. Prius court. You're in an administrative court, which is an E.C. Prius court.
Yes.
And that means they have no real authority. They're looking for your permission.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And sometimes they go so far as to try to even rule that you're crazy in order to move you into their jurisdiction. I've seen that happen.
Jan, if a person was summoned to tax court, I assume you'd take the same position. You'd want to move it into a federal court?
I will never allow them to summons me to tax court. If you've waited that long, you got a problem, and I don't know how easy or hard it is to get out of that court. I've seen it very.
No, I just a case like that. No, it's not my
situation.
The
moment the IRS starts to come out at you, you got to answer everything. They send you piece of paper. You must answer that paper and document it and certify it, everything. And you got to keep a good record of that. And after about, you know, they may disappear for a long time, then they may come back, and they disappear, and they come back, and they disappear. And then all of a sudden they start to get relentless. And you'll see the forms. If you look at the form numbers, form number 123, form number 124, one form, you know, not that that's the way it is and in that order or anything. But you'll see there's little form numbers on there. And what they're doing is they're moving it in an escalation. You're answering them, but they're ignoring that. It's like you're never answering them. And your papers won't show up. It's just their papers, what they applied against you. And you have to, if you're in tax court, you got to argue a point. Well, I've responded. And they're not even going to give you the opportunity to get there. It's a Gestapo court. It's really a serious problem. So what you have to do, when you see that escalation, you got to go after them and get them into a court of law and sue them, okay? And that's the other
thing. The individual that wrote the letter, correct?
Well, you look at, you'll find usually, you know, they'll start to pursue and move. Before they take you to tax court, usually they'll try to get some notice of liens out. And when there's a notice of lien, there's usually a IRS agent, usually two of them. They usually come in pairs, and I can understand why they come in pairs. But they come in pairs, and they'll knock on your door. You'll get their cards, so you have their name and their address and who they are. And those two people need to be put into as defendants. You have to get all of the robo-signers. They have these crazy names, you know, these slick names that they make up. And so call them that. Call them by that name. And then you might throw a couple of John Does in there or Mary Does. So you want to get the agents, you want to get the whatever people's names on the papers, or John Doe or Mary Doe if there's none on it. And then you want to get, you go after the director. And again, I'm not sure whether they call a director, but of the or the commissioner or what he is. Of the IRS, the top guy. He's responsible for everything. He's responsible for the policies and procedures. So you want to get that guy and the IRS too. So my first time, well, it doesn't matter. Anyway, you have to go after all those different individuals or agency. And
you would you would sue them in federal district court, correct?
Absolutely. You had to sue them in court. I sued them. First time I'd done this, I sued them in state court. They moved it over to federal court. But I understood that that's where I should have filed in the first place. Okay? So I ended up okay there, and it was much better. You see, I thought if the federal government, this was early on, I thought if the federal government was abusing me, I'll go to the state for protection. And if the state government's abusing me, I'll go to the federal government for protection. But it doesn't really work that way. And I don't know that the state won't take it on anyway. But, you live and you learn, and you find the right way to go. But, yeah, you have to go into the federal court. And if they're trying to take your property... If they're trying to take your property, then you have to, if they'll usually give you a notice of filing, and that's when you sue everybody. And you go after the sheriff, you go after the county clerk, you go after your banks. Any place where you have an interest, where someone else has some control over your money, you want to sue that person, that group, that the prago after the president, the top guy of the bank. And And you that prevents all of those people from moving. They can't.
If they're trying to change your allowances on your payroll check, for example,
well, you got a problem because you're already participating in the game, and I'm not sure how to defeat that. And remember, you're already in the game. People try to come out of that, and they'll give a notice of coming out of that, and they'll tell the notice to their employer, and most of the employers. They're not going to work with you on that. Some will, but most of them won't. And then you got to give notice to, if you're an entrepreneur and you got control of your money and you're not getting a paycheck from that perspective, that you got the control, you could do what you want. And they're going to be looking for someone like that. They're going to try to be looking to get some approval from that person, signature somewhere. Even if they send you a little bill, they tried this trick on me. They came after me for 150. Well, originally it was 300,000 or something like that, and they reduced it down to 120, 130,000, and then finally after we went through all the things and I accomplished my goals, later on they came out after me, and they only sent a bill for $50. That's all we know you owe us. They give you the appearance they're going to leave you alone at that point, so. The last thing I would do is write that check for $50, because once you did that, you now just made an agreement with them.
That was after you
and that's why they did it to me. They did it to get me to get an agreement with them.
Gotcha.
I believe anyway, so.
That was reduced after your lawsuits?
That was after I won my lawsuit, yeah.
Yes.
And I didn't win the lawsuit directly. What happens is they gave me a release of lien, and they also gave me a letter of an apology, and they also said that I wasn't liable for taxes for those particular years. And so when they gave me that, I dropped the case. That's all I was looking for. In hindsight, I shouldn't have dropped the case. I should have made it a precedence.
Do you feel like it's gone away at this point?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, not at all.
Okay. Okay, well, thanks, John. Appreciate the info.
Okay. All right, we're going to close down for now. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday, and we'll see you then. And meanwhile, people should get out to the site, volunteer for some time, and if you give us $5 a month or more to support us, it's well appreciated. Good night.